Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
July 27, 2022, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Welcome to Wednesday. Normally, we are produced by our friend Nature Boy, but he is off on a trip at the moment and will not be producing the show for the next couple of weeks. So, it's back to the freelance style, and quite honestly, I wasn't even going to do a live show tonight, but here I am. I have brought along our friend Chris Graves, who does the show Get Mad with Chris Graves on Ocelli.com, which has been recently, even though I haven't changed the graphic yet, has been recently given a slot on Sundays, 8 to 9 p.m. most times, Eastern. It'll start at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's the way that's going to go, and who knows how long it'll go. We'll see. We'll let things develop organically, right? And Chris is with me. We're going to do some work on the book tonight, actually, and that's not going to be part of the live broadcast, okay? But we're live right now, and I figured we'd catch up on a couple of things because I'm sick and tired of the news. I am sick and tired of, the debates over Joe Biden and his COVID, and now he's encouraging people to take the antivirals. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of that. I'm sick of what they're not covering. I'm sick of all of it. So, honestly, Wednesday, I'm taking a mental break here, and I'm doing it with my friend Chris. So, that's the way that's going. Chris, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing a lot better now, but I know we're not talking politics.
You know what's funny, guys? He was like, look, I'll try and do the political thing, and we'll go through the news if you want. I'll do my best. And I went, no. Just before airtime, I said, no, I don't want to do that. In fact, I actually want to start off the conversation with some stuff that I know is just, well, it's in your wheelhouse. It's in your area of interest. Now, anybody that heard that you had on the guy who directed Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6, I know I just did that out of order, but you had him on, McLaughlin.
No, you're right. When it came out, it was originally Jason Lives with an exclamation point, right, and then it said Friday the 13th, Part 6, so technically you're correct.
Well, see, I remember the poster that way, but, you know, my memory, God knows. And that was, what, 86, was it?
1986,
so,
yep.
Oh, I was 14. Guaranteed, when I saw that picture in a movie theater, I was probably high. Because that's what I did, going to the movies. And at 14, you know what? I might have been drinking there with some of my friends, because once you get the stuff snuck in, I mean, I didn't sneak in popcorn. I mean, I bought that legitimately. But they weren't going to serve me Jack Daniels. So,
1984? Yeah, probably not.
In 86? Yeah, no way. No way. I was 14, although I did get served at bars at about that age. But movie theaters didn't provide you with alcohol. At least they didn't back then. Anyways, so I'm sure I was at some, let me think about it. I either went to the cinema in Shrewsbury, or I went to the one that was near the Seaview Square Mall to see Friday the 13th Part 6, because that would have been the only two places I would have went to go see a movie at that time, unless it was an older one that had been running for a while. Then they had the cheap cinema on Main Street in Bradley Beach. Right. And now everybody's going, I don't know none of this stuff in Jersey. Why are you telling me? You're right. I'll stop. All right. Thing is, though, I do remember going to the theater and seeing something else and seeing the movie poster for that and going, yeah. I wanted to see it because I was going to go see any Friday the 13th. I was a big fan of the guy in the hockey mask who didn't start out in the hockey mask.
Yeah, he had a burlap sack from, like, the Elephant Man.
Yeah, that was weird. It was like a potato sack on his head.
Yeah, with one eye hole. That was it.
One eye hole, that's right.
And that was even kind of a take on The Town That Dreaded Sundown from the 70s, that movie that was based on the Texarkana real-life murders.
Right. But look, and here we go. Now you can get into all of the interesting fan facts and all that, and Chris does that. Now, his show is not always going to be devoted to horror films, but I guarantee you he's going to introduce some cool guests in there that have something to do with it now and then.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, I notice a lot of activity right now, it seems like. A whole lot of presentations. I mean, I feel like it started last year with, yep. or maybe it was the year before, when all of a sudden they relaunched the Child's Play franchise with the Chucky series. I don't know how everybody felt about that, but of course I made sure to catch it. They were putting them out on YouTube like a couple days after the release. So I was watching that faithfully.
It was a hell of a lot better than the remake. I like Mark Hamill, but that remake, I don't know, they turned Chucky into Terminator.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it's getting weird already. How many times are you going to melt down the doll and bring him back anyhow, right?
Well, 10 more times at least, if they get my letters, you know?
Well, maybe. and then again, you know, a lot of people don't recognize that one of the longest-running franchises in horror history is Hellraiser, but the original premise kind of lost in that series.
I gotta say. With the sadomasochism and everything. Yeah, they turned him into a paler Freddy Krueger.
I mean, after a while, when Pinhead is wielding a hatchet, it's not a good sign. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, he's not actually supposed to be a slasher. He's just supposed to be a sadomasochist from beyond the grave, and that's actually what Clive Barker originally titled the story.
Oh, well, allow me to actually correct you, and this will be a rare thing. We are explorers.
No tears, please. That's a waste of good suffering.
Exactly. We are explorers. That's my Pinhead impression. Okay.
Angels to some, demons to others.
Exactly. I funny thing. I guarantee you I have a movie clip, at least one, somewhere.
How many metal songs have Pinhead quotes in them? I've noticed that quite a bit.
I don't know. That's a good question, though.
Like Ministry, like they had it. A whole bunch of them did.
Well, samples or just quoting them?
No, the samples from the movies, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I because I've seen both, you know.
Oh, yeah, me too, yeah.
Yeah, but it's always interesting. I mean, Pinhead has some of the best lines in a lot of movies. And then they changed the actor. Because I guess he didn't want to sign on for one of the movies, so...
No. He wanted to continue it, and he dreaded the fact that someone else was playing it. And they only did that because the Weinstein brothers from Miramax, way back in the day, they wanted to hold on to the rights, so they would just put out crap straight to video to retain those rights. That's it.
Yeah, but that was the thing, is that at one point they presented him a script where he was like, this is awful. And so they just went and got another actor because they needed to, as you said, keep holding on to the rights, right? And what do I have here?
Originally, they were going to have a Pinhead versus Michael Myers story scripted by Clive Barker and directed by John Carpenter.
Yeah, and I don't know how I felt
about
it.
Last minute, they didn't do it.
Yeah, I don't know how I felt about that because that seems to be just too strange. What competition could Michael Myers possibly be?
Just imagine how you get into a version, you get to see a side of Michael Myers that's never presented, the perversion in his psyche, that kind of, like, you know, his, you get into this side where you see all of his, you know how when he's, like, killing, basically, he's getting off, basically, when he's killing these women.
Yeah.
So if you get into that side of it, that would have been, I'm not saying it would have been great, but it would have been different, though. Especially with the two creators attached to it.
Yeah, but see, to me, okay, now here's where my argument is. I know the two creators attached to it, it sounds like a good idea on paper, but I think it's best they didn't make it, and I'll tell you why. Michael Myers is best without exploring that.
I absolutely. But in a world where Rob Zombie turns him into white trash, I would opt for Clive Barker's version to see what he would have came up with.
I didn't mind Rob Zombie's white trash version.
Yeah,
but
it's like the standard serial killer, like origin. You know what I mean?
Well, see, but that's the thing is, look, he had to. I know what he was going for there, and he wanted to really make it. You know, because okay, let's be honest. The original Halloween today would not play as well given the amount of violence and the amount of
it's a short attention span.
Yeah,
crap.
It's a shorter attention span, and quite frankly, the subtlety of the original Halloween, people would just not even appreciate, I think. So Zombie had to do something to make it relatable to this consumer culture where people are just, you know, watching Forensic Files addictively and watching SVU and stuff like that, where brutal, horrible details of things are just commonplace. So he had to turn around and say, look, this is relatable to the real world. Because in the original, you're not really sure what the hell is going on. I mean, it's like you don't know what his motivation is.
And that's okay. What makes him scary. That's the key.
Exactly. So but he had to say, but here's the thing. I don't think that the audience at the time Zombie did his work would have even engaged. Really,
yeah, they wanted to know why. I know what you mean.
They needed a motivation because that's the key. Every one of those shows, Forensic Files, Murder Files, blah, 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 where they tell you.
Then I can see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, he don't.
Oh, wow.
God. All right. No, I can see what you're saying. Like he,
and there's the soundtrack for the unmade movie. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, he kind of made it like he borrowed from like those exploitation movies from the 70s, like Last House on the Left, with the brutality.
Yeah.
Especially when he's a kid and he's killing that kid in the woods, and the camera's panning out, and you see the sky like shaking and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, but that's the point of it. Is he had to update it enough so just to get the audience engaged. So I understand the white trash thing, although a lot of critics didn't like it. But
he made it his own, though, like you were saying, and that's all you could really hope for, you know.
Yeah, and I kind of dug the sequel for that reason. The second part, because
that was more his movie.
Yeah.
To be honest. Yeah, that was definitely more his movie, because with the white horse and everything, and he made Lori like a real spastic case.
Yeah, right. And then by the time we get around to the guys with the podcast and all that, I mean, come on.
Well, 2018's Halloween, which brought back Jamie Lee, that I liked because they rewrote it to be like the first movie where they're not related at all. So it goes back to Michael not having a motivation again. So I appreciated that as, you know, that part.
Well, see, that was good. But the lameness with which they used the podcast guys was like, you know, let's see if he reacts to the mask. It's like,
well, that's
dude.
Updated. Like you were saying, like with the Rob Zombie one, the audiences of 2007. But the audiences now, they're all about the podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
So they kind of had to have an entry point for the newer fans, you know?
No, I get it. But at the same time, I think they could have done a better job with that. That was kind of really ham-handed and lazy with the way they went with it. I mean, I get, and really, it's a good idea to introduce the true crime. Because again, like I was saying about all these TV shows,
were a true crime podcast. Yeah.
There's a huge slew of those true crime podcasts where, again, you have an audience desensitized that's going to be interested. So it's kind of fascinating. Hey, you know what? Since we were talking about Hellraiser, I did find that clip while I was talking to you.
Oh, here we go.
So I'm going to play a clip, and I want to see. Now, Chris has no idea what clips I have.
This is Doug Bradley, right? I met him too. Nice guy.
I'm not saying anything.
Okay.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play this clip, and I'm going to see if Chris knows what movie it was from. How about that?
Here we go.
Okay.
It'll probably be from the crap remake, the thing that you're talking about where they change actors. And all right, we'll see. This is fun.
And there are many choices here. What is there? There's more than 10 movies in the franchise, right?
No, it's about 10 now, yeah.
Okay, so there's 10 plus the HBO thing they're developing.
They are, yeah, yeah. You know about that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right, well, it's 10. I thought there was more than 10, but maybe I'm just confusing something. Also, the ridiculousness when they really tried to push the video game aspect.
it was Hellworld Part 8, where Henry Cavill, the future Superman, was actually one of the idiot kids in it.
Yep. Yep. Okay, so let's see if Chris can recognize exactly which movie this is from. So I'm going to cut our mics, and we're both going to listen to this clip, which is about a minute long. Okay? All right, let's see how this goes.
It's all a puzzle, isn't it, Joseph? Like a game of chess, perhaps. The pieces move apparently aimlessly, but always towards one single objective. To kill the king. Who is the king in this game, Joseph? That is the question you must ask yourself. Don't you recognize your own flesh, your own spirit?
I don't understand.
The eternal refrain of humanity. Pleading ignorance, begging for mercy. Please help me. I don't understand. This is the life you chose, Joseph. All the people you hurt, all the appetites you indulged. You have destroyed your own innocence, allowed your flesh to consume your spirit. You are your own king, and this is is the hell you have created for yourself.
Yeah. So it is the monologues and dialogues in many Hellraiser movies, not all, are, I think, a little too sophisticated for the current
horror. A little Shakespearean in a way.
A little bit. So do you know what movie that's from?
I know the exact scene. I remember it just like it was yesterday when my father had the illegal cable box hookup and I was watching it on pay-per-view. It's Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, where he's stuck inside the sculpture.
Mm. See, now, I have it marked as Hellraiser 4.
No, Hellraiser Bloodline. Okay. Yeah, that speech, I believe, I could be wrong, I believe he's talking to the nightclub owner that ends up sacrificing all the women to the to Pinhead.
See, that movie was consistent with the themes, you know.
To an extent, yeah. They did break with it a little bit because it wasn't the true Pinhead. It was only the evil side of Elliot Spencer, the captain from World War One.
See, and I liked that when they introduced him back into it and then he reemerges. Yeah. There's a lot to this, and quite frankly, again, there's a lot of subtext. So even though you got this sort of semi-Shakespearean stuff being read out, and there's also a whole lot of carnage.
Originally, it was supposed to be the woman from the first Hellraiser that Clive was imagining to be the on the poster for the series. But audiences loved that image of that guy with the pins in his face.
Yeah. No, and he's iconic. I love Pinhead. Several times I've considered, look, I don't buy a lot of collectible stuff, but several times I've considered some of the very cool collectibles that have come out with Pinhead. I mean, they made some very interesting statues and, yes, indeed, action figures even, of these guys, these Cenobites. And I like the open-ended nature of it to begin with. As with most things when they were, you know, coming down with these watered-down sequels. And as you said, you know, it was the Weinsteins and Miramax trading spots there, trying to come up with ways to just hang on to the franchise. They had to put out another movie.
They want another slasher, and he's not a slasher.
Yeah.
He's a monster, but he's not a slasher.
See, but to me, is he a monster? That's the other question. Because
that's no, angel to some, demons to others.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he would be an angel to me, but he only goes where he is requested. You know what I mean?
Well, they put morality into the sequels, and it's not about a morality play. It's supposed to be about, you know, your kinks and things, you know?
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But again, even in the original, right, where you have the puzzle box and Frank has, you know, been sucked into the mattress and what's-her-name's trying to bring him back.
Julia, the lament configuration, the puzzle box, yeah.
Right, the lament configuration, the puzzle box. Now, that puzzle box gets solved by the stepdaughter of Julia, and that's a
Kirstie.
Yeah, and look, the whole discussion there, like, hey, look, you called us, you know?
But here's the thing with the Cenobites. They'll make deals with you. They might not necessarily honor them, but for the most part, they do. If you agree to go get other people for them, they might cut you a break for a little while, depending on their mood.
Right. And then, of course, when you get into the thing with the club owner who ends up with the piece of artwork, and then he's feeding the artwork. He's feeding these, you know, different random women to the artwork, which goes along with what Julia does, because Julia's going out picking up men, bringing them home, and pretty much just, you know, here you go.
He wants Frank to have his skin back.
Yeah, and so, I don't know. To me, it's a fascinating franchise. They've gone in some bad directions with it, but I'm going to pay attention to that HBO series. I want to see where it goes, you know? And
well, that's the idea. Like, they did the same thing with one of my favorites, A Nightmare on Elm Street. They turned Freddy Krueger into, like, Shecky Green, a comedian.
Yeah, I know. The Freddy Krueger thing got... But Freddy Krueger was campy and goofy to begin with.
You know? Yeah, but even so, he was still scary as hell in the first two, at least.
I mean, you know, when you got the thing where he sticks his tongue out of the phone and licks her face and all that.
So it's a dark humor, but that the tone is still pretty scary.
Of course, my favorite scene ever was actually in one of the movies that's not really the strongest is actually in Dream Warriors.
Where, are you going to say the TV?
No, not the TV. You know, the girl goes, I'm bad and I'm beautiful. And I'm like, well, you're not all that beautiful and you're not all that bad, but you do have a switchblade.
And she's a junkie.
And she's a junkie, so Freddie turns his fingers into a whole bunch of syringes.
He's like, let's get high.
Want to get high? Boom, and sticks them in all these waiting mouth holes in her arms.
Well, they're actually supposed to be another part of a female anatomy, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, okay, I'm trying to be, you know. But
I hear
anyway,
you.
The thing is, you could say they're little mouths almost, right? But they could be. It's not dissimilar.
We're talking,
you know,
to the person that developed it. Yeah, we'll go with that, I guess.
Fair enough. But anyway.
Well, the big Freddy snake, actually, they had to put all that slime all over him because it was pretty phallic and pretty pink looking originally.
Well, yeah, look, there's a lot of strange things that...
Undertones. Yeah,
yeah, these different guys design stuff in there that it's like, wow, okay. You don't.
Well, they're not like the Disney animators where they'll literally just draw exactly what you think you're seeing.
I always listen, that cracked me up when I saw, like, you know, penises all drawn in the...
That's what I'm saying, a Little Mermaid, like, in the kingdom underwater.
Yeah. At least it's a horror movie, so, you know, you're throwing phallic imagery in there, and it's like, yeah, okay, that's fine.
And it's in a dream, so it's like, it kind of fits a little bit.
And today, Rick and Morty, I mean, everything is, you know... Everything is a sex organ.
Then you got Scary Terry is Freddy Krueger.
And Scary Terry is Freddy Krueger, although he's a legally safe knockoff of an 80s horror.
Yeah, and all he says is the B word over and over again, and that's not too far from it.
Well, that was one of the things that was almost shocking, you know, is that Freddy would, like, taunt his victims like that and all. Anyway.
Welcome to prime time, B.
Yeah,
you know.
Of course. Yeah. So, all right. Anyhow, there are new things happening, and like I said, I think it really got rolling more once the people got behind the Chucky series a couple of years ago, which there is a reboot that they put on USA Network, of all places, but like I said...
It's not a reboot, though. I got to correct you. It's continuation of the original series. Even though they did that remake with Mark Hamill, they still kept the original series going, so it is in the continuity.
Okay, I get it, but it's but it's a reboot of the franchise because basically they had already, you know, run strange with the kid and all the stuff.
Eat a Chucky, cult of Chucky. Yeah,
I got it. I mean, they had already gone a lot of different places, and this comes back to the you know, the original beginning, sort of, right? Except it's updated. Now it's not a little boy, it's a teenager. You know,
a gay teenager, actually, too.
A gay teenager. They updated all the themes, and they managed to put political correctness.
But you know what? You know what? I was expecting that. You know, I was expecting it to be all woke and everything. Even though the kid's gay, they still let them swear and everything for a USA show. I was kind of surprised. And the violence and stuff, it is like one of the movies. So
yeah,
hats off to them. They did pretty good. And it wasn't too, like, woke down your throat either.
No, see, to me, I thought that that was an appropriate level of adding that in.
So. They even have him killing a whole movie theater of people, and like with Aurora and things like that. That's pretty ballsy.
Yeah, no, it has the edge of the original in my mind. And it's got better technology, of course.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
You know, because the original, if you look at the original, it's kind of funny. And you know they're saving money a lot in those scenes where the kid, Andy, has to keep holding the doll up to his ear to get directed to Chucky.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, that's a cost-saving measure right there.
Right.
You know, but...
Clearly.
You look at this USA series and you don't feel that way. And in fact, I thought it was pretty inventive, some of the stuff they came up with, like the housekeeper getting pretty much murdered by the stuff in the dishwasher.
Oh my God. Yeah. And like I said, again, it's on USA, not even HBO or something.
Right, right.
Pretty bloody.
Yeah. I mean, the foul language is a little restricted when they run it on USA, from what I understand. But
no, I've heard the F-bomb quite a bit on there.
Yeah. Well, you can, because they stream it and they have those words in there, but it's bleeped out or blanked out.
Oh, I've never seen it on the actual broadcast. I've seen it like... Okay, but I got you.
That's why I said, from what I understand on USA, they air it there. Because USA is a basic cable thing. So, you know, they have new standards about the F-bomb. You can drop, like, one a season, and you're allowed now. That's new.
Breaking Bad would do that with their season finales. They'd give them an F-bomb. That's right.
AMC started this whole thing with, Breaking Bad, and then they moved it over to The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
so
you're right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, you can trace the whole evolution of a lot of the foul language becoming more normalized. Like, I even know that, you know, I can drop a couple of S-bombs during a long broadcast on AM and FM, and I can get away with it now. Can't drop the F-bomb on AM and FM yet. Not even once a season. But on TV, you can. So, all right. Anyways, I just...
Why is that, do you think?
I just think that societal shift is happening, you know, much like...
No. I mean, the fact that you can't do that with the radio, but you can totally do it with the TV. That makes no sense to me.
Well, the FCC has more strict regulations on an open-air broadcast. So,
okay, all right.
You know, when it comes to cable, there's a bit of ambivalence about how strict you have to be.
Because even on the regular TV, they started to be able to show, like, a person's behind, like, on NYPD Blue in, like, the 90s, and that had never been done before until then, I think.
Right, and they would get away with the S-word on NYPD Blue, like, once in a while.
Yeah.
And they started that, because previous to that, as we well know from George Carlin, that was one of the words that you couldn't...
He won that case, too.
Yeah, but either way, that's one of the words that the FCC then later immortalized as, you can't say this on broadcast, so...
All right. Anyway, going back to your horror thing, yeah. I don't know. The FCC is pretty horrifying, but I was just curious.
Yeah, no, it fits with the discussion. No, I'm just saying that, to my mind, though, the Chucky series is faithful to the original material.
Okay, because I thought you were going the other direction when you first started.
No, not at all. I was expecting a disaster. And did not get a disaster. Actually, it's pretty good. If that's what
it's
you're looking for,
it's kind of a prequel too. Because they show a lot of Charles Lee Ray as a kid, even.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of stuff in there. See, that's the thing. There's clearly in the timeline, we're past all of the events of a lot of the stuff of Andy and all that. He even brings him up.
He's actually in. And he's included. The thing I love about this is that it kind of bridges the world of Bride of Chucky and the original Child's Play, because all these characters that were in the original three movies, they're weaved into this, like, because Tiffany's in there too. So it's kind of bridging the gap, because for a while there was no Andy when, you know, Tiffany was around and vice versa or whatever. And I think they're coming around with this.
Right. I you know what? I always forget her name, but I love that actress too, who plays Tiffany.
Jennifer Tilly. Jennifer from Bounce. Tilly.
Yes. Jennifer Tilly. And a lot of cool stuff. Including she does voice actress work for
On Family Guy.
Family Guy, yeah. So no, I like her. I always have. And she is really kind of uniquely sinister as the as the Tiffany character. So and she does on social media, she goes through time periods where, you know, she's all about that, you know, just totally happy to be Tiffany basically.
Oh, she loves being the modern-day Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah.
For a little while. I mean, very cool stuff. All right. Anyways, but there's other stuff going on besides the Hellraiser series, you know, and I don't know what else. You keep up more on this stuff than anything.
We got the new we got the final in this new batch of Halloweens, which is supposed to be totally different than Halloween Kills, which I think we discussed before. We both didn't really appreciate it that much. So.
No, that was kind of bad. I mean, it just...
Hopefully they correct things. Like, you know, they don't have to be over-the-top gore for a Halloween movie, in my opinion.
No, not if you're somebody who's going... I mean, look, if you're doing Texas Chainsaw Massacre again, yeah, you got to...
Even that. I had a discussion with someone recently about that. Look at the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Toby Hooper, the guy who made it, he was going for a PG rating, no joke. And he probably could have gotten it, like, in decades after that.
Yeah.
This stuff, there's one drop of blood in it, and it's when Franklin's in the wheelchair, and it's in the dead of night, and you only see splashes of it when his flashlight's going up and down. So that movie is relatively bloodless, like the original Halloween. He was going for more Alfred Hitchcock, like In Your Mind, because when he puts the girl on the meat hook in the original, you never see that meat hook actually enter or come out the other side. That's all your mind, like, completing all that gore. So that original is really not a gore fest like people think it is.
Yeah, but, you know, it also contained the scene with the chainsaw ending up on, you know, Leatherface's legs. You know, he gets...
A little piece of sausage. Okay.
No, I'm just thinking about it. I mean, look, and at the time, they wanted to give that thing an X-ray because of the violence.
Some countries did.
Yeah. You know, and
you know that that movie got made with the money from Deep Throat through mafia connections, and that everyone involved that should have got paid got screwed by the New York mafia.
Well, there's a lot of horror movies that actually got made with mob money. People don't know it.
But, oh, I'm sure. But that one made over $100 million in 1974. So to adjust the whatever that amount would be today, it's criminal.
Well, even stranger is, you know, like we were talking about Hellraiser, I was reading recently that it was made for just about $1 million,
yep.
The original, which is nothing by movie standards. I mean, it's, I know it sounds like a lot of money, but it's really not. For
in 1986, well, yeah, in 86 when they were filming it, it came out in 87, but same thing with Nightmare on Elm Street. It was about $1.5 million, and you got like rotating rooms with blood coming out of beds and everything, and you get some pretty intricate things that they were able to do on like no money at all.
Yeah, and cartoony stuff like what is it? Is it Johnny Depp that gets sucked into the bed and then the blood spews up on the ceiling? Like
that was John Depp's first movie. Yeah, and he gets pulled in by Freddy, and then a big fountain of blood comes out of the bed. And what that was, they modeled that after the old Fred Astaire dancing up the wall routine, where it would be a rotating room. Yeah, and they did the same thing. It was the same room for Tina when Tina gets dragged up the ceiling and everything. That's the same room. The same thing that they constructed.
Right, and that's back in the days of having to always put the actors in harnesses and stuff and literally, you know, either pull them up by hand.
They almost got electrocuted when that blood came down. It started pouring out the side of it and hit all the cables and everything. Robert Englund and all them standing off to the side got shocked, literally.
See, now, all this insider stuff that...
I'm babbling, I got you.
No, I'm not saying you're babbling, it's just I'm going, there's a lot of stuff here that we could talk about, but again, I want to go to, you know, what's new. Yeah, the Halloween finale is supposed to come. I don't know if that's going to go with a fizzle or what, but if Halloween Kills is any indicator, I'm not feeling optimistic, but who knows? You know, maybe they'll pull it out at the end. I don't want to see them rebooted again, I'll tell you that.
Oh, well, they're going to, obviously, because this is supposed to be like the beginning of the end of a trilogy, even though it's would be a part four, because you got the original from 78 connected to it.
Yeah.
They're going to reboot it again, obviously, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, my favorite thing to bring up is, of course, in the original series of movies, Halloween 3, which is...
I was going to say, I want to see a crossover where you actually get the those masks... Silver Shamrock masks, and you got Michael involved. I want to see the two worlds collide.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? There was some plan for I don't know if it was that, but they were going to do something else with that movie, and I think it didn't do well enough to justify the.
I know what you mean. What the plan was is John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, the creators, they had no interest in even writing or being involved with Halloween 2, the original, where he's in the hospital and it continues right after Michael gets shot off the balcony there.
Right.
They were contractually obligated to. So for Halloween 3, they're like, we are definitely not having Michael or Dr. Loomis or anything. What they wanted to do was like the Tales from the Crypt Twilight Zone thing, where they had a new Halloween-based story every year,
right?
An anthology series. And the makers of Friday the 13th wanted to do that with Friday the 13th Part 2 as well, and not be Jason as an adult. They wanted to do something else, a different story that would have something to do with the date, Friday the 13th, and bad luck and things. But they didn't end up doing that either. So,
well,
yeah.
They kind of did, because you ended up with Friday the 13th, the series, where...
You're correct, which was just about cursed objects, and even that series originally was called Friday's Curse, and they just wanted to exploit the film series title.
Right, but that was actually more like the original intent behind Friday the 13th anyway, even though it was weird and it had nothing to do with Jason. It was,
right.
You know, and they
made
but
there was
those...
a plan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a plan, and I talked to the guy that almost got the episode made.
Okay.
Tom McLaughlin, the guy I just talked to. There was a plan that if that had gone long enough and they had one of the season finales or the series finale was going to be Jason's hockey mask in the shop.
That,
and it would have tied the movies in with that, but they didn't go long enough.
That would have done it. You know what? I need to ask you about something. Have you ever seen the series Black Mirror?
I know all about it, and I've heard all about it, and I just never got a chance to.
You know why? Well, you know why I bring it up? Because one of the most interesting episodes to me is they seem to be these totally disconnected stories, and it's all about really, honestly, the horror of technology and you know, and what it does. I mean, those
one whole season was like based on Star Trek, right?
I don't know about Star Trek. Oh, wait a minute. There was a thing that was a pseudo sort of Star Trek thing.
That's what I mean, yeah, like a Star Trek like thing.
Yeah, the guy literally creates people, like he draws them in from the real world by entering their information and sequencing them. And, and then he has his own, like, he's like in an online Star Trek type game, except he's
in a simulation kind of thing.
And he brings in like all the women he wants in real life and stuff like that, and makes them and they're sentient is what the problem is. They're sentient. They're actually people. You know, like they're copies. They don't even know that they're copies. They think they're the real people until they figure it out. And
that's not too far off the mark in real life, as scary as it sounds.
Yeah. So look, it's really, but that's what this whole series does. You know, a whole thing where they have
the horrors of technology.
Yeah. I mean, like I like some of the episodes where they've introduced this a couple of times where people have, you know, internet connectivity and stuff like that, except it's in a virtual realm where you sort of just, you know, tap something in your neck and your eyes glaze over and you're in, you know, virtual reality and you can rewind reality and re-experience it if you like.
It's not totally like a Tron kind of thing.
No, it's all over the place, and then they tied it together at one point, which I thought they were gonna just do season finale, you know, series finale with it.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They they continued it afterwards, but I thought it was gonna be a series finale because there ends up being a museum of terrible things. Like one, and these stories are very twisted. Like one of them is, you know, this one guy's wife dies, and so they extract her her consciousness, and they put it into like a little pod, and then they can put it in his head. So she's like living in his head. He's trying to parent with this woman, and then he ends up getting desires and stuff like this, and he winds up. They wind up giving him a solution where they put the sentient thing into a teddy bear, and the teddy bear can only say like two phrases. Like, that's it. Like, there's no longer this woman in his head, and she's trapped forever in this hell where she can only say, like, you know, teddy bear is sad or hug me or something like that. And that's all she can do. And she's like going insane inside the teddy bear. But because these technologies got so out of control in that universe, they created, you know, UN resolutions about you can't destroy these sentient beings. So the teddy bear winds up sitting in a museum, okay, because it's not allowed to be destroyed, but, you know.
Kind of like a clone's right, if that ever became a thing.
Something like that. And there's even a thing about cloning here where, you know, initially, and this is a real world thing where you can subscribe to a service that'll go and scrape the social media of a loved one who's died. And
They actually put that in wills too now.
Yeah. But here's the thing about it, not just the will and what happens afterwards, but they create an AI so that you can text back and forth with this person. So
that's creepy.
Well, it's creepy, but it goes weirder in Black Mirror because, you know, this woman gets that because her fiance gets killed. He goes out, you know, to the store one day and just doesn't come back. Car accident, right? So she gets in on that, and then they offer her, listen, we have another experience. So they offer another level of experience, and then eventually they get to this thing where you can, like, grow an artificial life form that simulates the person who's died. So
it's like they're not gone at all.
Yeah, I mean, and wow. It's really, and to me, it questions a lot of things. And it doesn't just go into that, but there's also one of my favorite episodes is with Bryce Dallas Howard, which is really weird because I never even paid attention to her before. And that's Ron Howard's daughter.
She's in the new Jurassic Park movies.
Yeah, maybe, but see, I don't watch Jurassic Park. I have no desire. So, like, right. For me, she's in a bunch of stuff I don't care about. But she shows up in this episode called Nosedive. And it's all about your social credit score and how it is, like, you know, all the stuff like on Yelp and, you know, how today even you take a ride, you get an Uber or you get a Lyft or whatever, and the driver can rate you.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's the social credit score, yeah.
Well, the thing is that everything you do now in this universe, everything you do is partially dependent on your social credit score, which is all about, yeah, your real-world interactions, your online interactions. And so if people decide to pick on you, they can totally wreck your life. Like, yep. you can't get a place to live. You can't get nothing. Okay.
That's like the extension to the cancel culture.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like cancel culture, but with the technocratic aspect added to it. And Bryce Dallas Howard starts out doing well, and she keeps putting down her brother, who's got a crappy credit score, and and other people that have become pariahs for one reason or another. And it starts out, she means to do well, but she's mean to other people who haven't gotten to her level. And she's supposed to go to a wedding where, you know, she can't be the, what do you call it? The,
bridesmaid?
Well, no, not, she ends up being a bridesmaid at one point, but like, what is the maid of honor, I guess, is the main one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she can't be the maid of honor, and she finds out it's because her credit score is not as good as this other woman's. So in the course of trying to get there, though, she interacts with people. She pisses them off, and they just totally bring her, like, very good status down to crap. And then all of a sudden she can't travel, her credit's canceled, nothing works. She's just screwed. And, you know, there's more to it, but the whole thing...
I could have played this part.
Yeah. I mean, the whole dynamic of it, though, I mean, look, people experience this, you know, people say, oh, it's so unfair, and I'm like, well, you know, there are ways that people experience that already and always have, but... Yep. The idea that now it can become so arbitrary that if you don't, you know, smile at somebody every single time, like they showed that she was sort of like not kind to somebody, like serving her coffee at like a Starbucks type joint.
Yeah, thumbing her nose at people.
So she thumbs her nose at people and they're like, you know what, screw you. And they start hammering her. And it's like, you know, every little slight and every little rudeness now becomes a thing that costs you heavy, which in a way, like, I got to tell you, although I'm not for the social credit score or the technocracy or anything else, I kind of don't necessarily object to people being
able... There's
some
kind
of
justice happening.
There's a bit of justice. If you're a jerk, a lot of people get away with being a jerk in places.
Yeah.
And it's always amazing to me. It's like, oh, I think that guy's a good guy. And it's like, yeah, you didn't see him.
No, it's like a technological karma.
Yeah, it is. But a lot of people skirt that in real life. And some people cannot. Some people get unfairly judged, you know, and,
oh, yeah.
and guilt by association, all that kind of stuff. And that happens. But what I'm saying is, on one level, I think it's horrible, the whole social credit thing. And why should we leave it up to AI to figure out what our value is as a human being? Yes, absolutely. But on the other hand, when somebody who is just being a dick, okay, gets treated like that, I kind of go, you know what? You deserve it.
Yep.
And,
there's a balance.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of balance. You feel like karma is being served a bit. And at a certain point, you do feel like that with this Bryce Dallas Howard coward, where it's like, character, where it's like, yeah, lady, you know what? You should really be a little more kind to the people you think are beneath you.
Yeah. Should be kind to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, but it, but especially those. If you really sincere, I don't know, I don't have this mentality that people are beneath me. But if you do, you know, and you honestly believe that, that should be more of a cause for you to not be a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, if you honestly think, well, this person is just never going to get to my level in life, whoever the hell you are and whoever you think you are.
Exactly.
I mean, if you honestly think that, then what is the purpose for being cruel to them? What is that? I mean, you know, come on. I don't know. I just don't have it in me to do that. Somebody wrongs
If you think that they're beneath you and you think, that they got, well, first of all, you wouldn't think they were beneath you. You would think that they had a bad roll of the dice. So wouldn't that be incentive to be even nicer to them, maybe?
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this, is that,
is that
for me emotionally, it's like that, but I observe others, and this is not the way people behave. So frankly, only a privileged group of individuals who behave according to certain sets of rules are going to get decent treatment in the case that the technocracy becomes more prolific as it is. And that's demonstrated in that episode of Black Mirror very, very starkly, in my mind. Yeah. But at the same time, part of it, part of the time, and that's what I enjoy about that series, actually, is that it's in some ways very predictable, but in other ways, not so much. And it actually took me on a bit of a ride. It's not just, okay, I know this person is, you know, they're bad to begin with. Now they have to learn a lesson. Their obvious arc is they're going to know better next time. So, you know, it's not like that every time.
I like when they just stay a scumbag.
Well, sometimes it's good, but see, that's the thing. It's mixed results. Some of the stuff in this series is like that. But the reason why I started talking about it again is because they have this museum where...
it's like the Friday the 13th series with the shop.
Well, it's a museum, and the funny thing is that there's a lot of stuff in there that you don't know what it is, but a lot of it relates to the previous episodes. And the driving thing in this is messed up, too. Let me just explain this, because it does go along with the horror genre, although it's not horror, technically. There's a guy who was scheduled to be executed and was executed, right? But they recorded it in a special way in, like, virtual reality. So it generates a brand new sentient guy again. It respawns him. And you can pay a fee to show up, press a button, and execute him.
Okay? Oh. Yeah. I thought you were going where it could have been, like, how they remake Shocker now. But then you added that, and I'm like, okay.
No, this is a much more evolved thing psychologically. So at a certain point, it was totally illegal and acceptable, and they're just spawning these new consciousnesses and electrocuting them, you know, in an electric chair, but for the amusement of somebody who pays a price, right?
Yeah.
And this guy ends up in the museum, and they're allowing them to do this, and every single time... they're generating this guy. It is, you know, for all intents and purposes, a newly spawned consciousness that is that guy again and again, over and over again. And of course, you know, how do you know the argument of what's retained as he goes back and gets recycled in the system?
Yeah.
So, you know, talk about cruel and unusual punishment.
I was going to say.
At a certain point, his daughter gets involved and decides, you know, I need to put a stop to this. They need to stop torturing my father's soul, pretty much. Yeah. And she goes after it, and that's a whole weird story in and of itself.
It's like a version of hell.
Yeah, the lady and the teddy bear, another version of hell. You got various, you know, this is very Dante-esque. This is very Divine Comedy-esque because, you know, the lady's still trapped in the teddy bear. There's nothing that can be done about that. And there's a very, like, touching little scene at the end. But the guy who's profiting off of this museum, you know, at a certain point, I mean, it's like he's got all these artifacts from these different things. The one thing is, like, I forget what it's called. It's like a grain, I think they call it. It's like a grain of rice that they put in your neck that connects to that other experience thing. See, that's another thing that happened. The one guy winds up committing murder. This is in a different story. Winds up committing murder because he runs back his wife's playback, you know, and gets to find out that she was cheating on him. So he turns around and goes to kill the guy. I think kills his wife. You know, there's all kinds of stuff like that. And then there's even an apocalyptic, you know, futuristic Terminator-esque kind of universe. Like, you know, those dogs, those...
the scary looking robotic dogs for the military.
Yeah. So before I saw those being made by Nissan and Hyundai, which they are.
Originally, it was DARPA.
Yeah. No. But if you don't believe me, Hyundai has made a robot dog. Okay.
Wow.
These, you know, robot guard dogs, right? So the first time I actually ever saw them is in Black Mirror when I actually saw these things operate. And these are these dogs chasing down these rebels. You know, apocalyptic war, might have been a nuclear war, but, you know, they're chasing people down and they're trying to survive and, you know, stay like outside Skynet. Of there. Yeah, it's like a Skynet aftermath kind of situation. and they deal with that. There's a whole aspect to that.
And let's keep in mind that the military and the intelligence agencies have liaisons to Hollywood that feed these type of plot devices and plots in general to writers.
Oh, yeah. Well, Pierce Redmond used to do a show with a guy named Tom Secker that really focused on that all the time. I don't know if you ever listened to those podcasts.
I have.
Yeah, I mean, that is some intense stuff. And you know what? And then the last thing I saw released, and this was just a Netflix only thing, but I don't know if they're making anymore. Cause you know, COVID happened and whatever, but, they brought in, what is it? Lady Gaga, I think. Anyway, one of those pop star women, they brought her in. She did a good job, actually. She's like a star musician, and they create these little dolls of her. Right? So that you have like a friend, and it's like Ashley is the name of the doll, and Ashley's the name of the character, but you have a little friend that you can interact with, and you're a big fan, so you can get one, and they have her limited to saying, you know, a certain amount of phrases, and nobody thinks that there's a real consciousness to it. They think it's just a sophisticated, you know, old school kind of talking doll, right?
Yeah.
You know, like they used to have, oh, mommy, I'm hungry, you know.
Rocking Tina.
Yeah.
The original Chucky from Twilight Zone.
There you go. But a doll like that, people are kind of accustomed to that. So people think that it's sort of like that, except you can plug it into the internet and it takes downloads so it can get new information and customized to you and all that, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like, actually, that's kind of like the Child's Play remake that was going on a couple years ago where he was like AI and stuff and went right into the internet and he could control like the light system and everything.
Yeah, well, but this is the other way around where you're just downloading, you know, and there are many toys that exist like this that you can download new information. You know, there's a bear that reads out of a book that I actually considered getting for more than one of my children that you can plug in with a USB and you can download new books and it reads them bedtime stories, okay? But that's very basic, and it's not artificial intelligence. It's just, you know, data transfer and cleverly packaged. So everybody thinks that's what it is. This girl ends up with one of these amazing Ashley dolls or whatever, and it malfunctions. And when it malfunctions, she comes to find out that actually all the little Ashley dolls are copies of Ashley. They're all copies of her consciousness. Okay.
Wow.
And what they've done is put stuff in to restrict them so that they can't, you know, actually act out on their own. But the reason why they're so sophisticated and smart and they can take on new information and work with it is because they have that capability, but it's being suppressed. Right.
Wow.
And the real woman is in a coma. So when they when this one malfunctions on this girl, she totally is Ashley. She's like, I'm Ashley. And it's a whole thing. And eventually, you know, anyway, like I said, the pop star, if it was Lady Gaga or Ashley Simpson, I don't remember, but I think it was Lady Gaga, did an amazing job with this, not only as the voice actor behind the sentient little bot, but also as herself. And it's got this whole other subplot that it's like her sister, I think, some of her family has taken control of her, kind of like a Britney Spears kind of situation.
What's the word? The conservative, the thing that her father went to court for?
Yeah, well, he had a conservatorship.
And that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's the word. Yep.
And when you have a teenage performer, that's something that if the business becomes elaborate enough that almost everybody has to do. But if somebody can prove basically that you are not a fully functioning adult who should not take over your own affairs. Yeah. These things will go on into your adulthood. As with happened with, now I don't give a crap about Britney Spears, really. But nobody should be a slave for any reason.
Exactly.
And that's what that amounts to, is that this person who has control over your money and your business, being that that's the only thing you do, they control your life and they can make you do things or not do things or restrict you or take you to certain places, and you almost have no say.
And they have no incentive to seeing you actually get well at all.
Well, no, there's never any incentive to say, oh, well, they've gotten better because they have access to your money. They have access to you. They can make decisions to generate more money. And I mean, at the end of the day, They own you, basically.
That's a horror movie right there.
Well, but see, that was an element that was in here that wasn't the primary plot, but was part of the thing that I'm telling you about with these bots.
Well, that's some good writing. Then. Yeah. Yeah.
And no, it's very elaborate. It's very deep. Every one of these things, even though I've described them in certain ways, guarantee you I did not mention other sub and parallel plots that are emerging.
Right.
Which, you know, to me, I know I'm talking all about fiction tonight, guys, and I know this is an unusual episode of the Ocelli Effect, but I really need a break. I need a break from the reality. I don't want to talk school shootings, okay? I don't want to talk exactly, you know, how many cases. Forget COVID at this point. Monkeypox. I mean, COVID's coming back, and now monkeypox.
That's what I mean, because Biden. Yeah, that's what I mean. And I heard that earlier in the news, and I'm like, come on, already? Do you see the seeds of this thing coming back in the fall?
I mean, really, we're going to have plenty of time for politics as we get toward these midterms, which are going to be insane. Okay. Weirdness is going on. You know, Disney is too politically correct. They're all on the leftist side. The right wingers screaming.
That's when you know the empire is ready to fall.
Well, you know what's funny about
don't have real problems. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what's funny about right wingers screaming that right now, they will not play on Hulu. They're not willing to take the Democrats' money to play the whole, all the commercials about, you know, Republicans are taking away your rights. Because of Roe v. Wade. No, I'm serious. They're not willing to go along with the DNC thing. They're turning away millions of dollars for advertising. I mean, a lot of millions of dollars for advertising on Hulu because Hulu is now owned by Disney. And here you go. Is Disney all on the liberal agenda side? No, they're not. They're on somebody's side, but you better think
about it.
They're
on the green side.
But are they?
The dollar, the almighty dollar.
Oh, that green side. Yeah,
yeah, I don't mean the green as in, yeah. Yeah.
No problem. But this is kind of an unusual episode. I know that. And I initially had a different guest planned for tonight, and I'm going to try and move him into tomorrow. Because there is something important in the news that I do want to discuss. But a whole lot of this crap, you know, like I said, Hulu and that and the advertising and the political season's going to get amped up. And what's going on with Pelosi today? There's a whole slew of headlines about that nonsense. I mean, I am sick and tired of it. Really, I am.
And you're going to get Trumpy back, too, because when do they actually start actively campaigning?
Well,
it's already 2023 almost, right?
Yeah, but see, I don't know the rules on this because... See, previous to Trump, when somebody went into the White House, they stopped campaigning, you know, for...
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it became like where you could campaign and not do the job that you were vying for originally.
Yeah. Funny thing, Trump didn't stop campaigning. So...
I know!
Everybody else has now followed suit where the campaigning is continuous. And, yeah. I mean, you know, I've been hearing about Stacey Abrams now ever since she lost in the governor's race, and rightfully so, because whether they steal the vote or not, you're not going to convince me that Stacey Abrams gets elected. If she is selected in the state of Georgia as the governor, yeah. I'm telling you now, I'm going to be so generous with everybody's conspiracy theories about how elections are stolen completely. I mean, I'm going to start going
start on. Start being generous.
There's no way. There is no way she's getting in as governor.
I didn't think Trump would get in there, buddy. And look what happened.
I absolutely was wrong about that, too. I thought it was a joke. Even when I had Roger Stone on the show, and I said, come on, Roger, man, you got to say, this is a big publicity stunt, right? No, you don't understand. He was right.
He was dead last. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't. And
exactly.
He was in the White House.
Exactly. Him, and I'll tell you what else. Not only did Roger Stone try to warn me how wrong I was, and this is me admitting how wrong I was. And usually I'm pretty good at these things, or at least I used to be. But there's new rules in play here. Folks,
they changed the playbook, dude. It's not you.
They did change the playbook, but in such a strange way. Because, you know, we all thought, I mean, honestly, when we were coming into the 2016 selection, I thought that we were going to see Bush versus Clinton again.
Yep.
And I got Clinton. I got that part right. And then when I saw that Trump was rising and they put him there, I said, oh, man, they're going to hand it to her. I mean, yeah. I literally was on board with they're going to steal it all to hand it to her. But then two people, And I swear to you, I mean, a bunch of people tried to convince me to get on board and offered me money and all kinds of stuff, which I had an elaborate discussion with somebody about just 2 days ago. I'm not going to reveal who it was, but it was somebody who is
in the know,
much more prominent in alt media than I've ever been. Okay, actually, somebody who I'm going to bring on the show pretty soon, who you guys have never had an inkling I've ever had contact with, if he still wants to come on, who is well known. Okay, and we were having a private conversation, so I'm just going to reveal a little part of it, and not any details. But both of us knew that if we had decided to get on the Trump train, not saying if he did or didn't, by the way, but we knew if we had gotten on the Trump train right away in 2014, okay, because that's when these offers went out, 2014, 2015, we would be in better financial positions today by a lot. And I guarantee you, I would not be asking you guys for donations anymore. Okay? If I had simply gotten on board with the Trump thing, I mean, the initial thing was 10 grand for me. Not saying anybody else's offers. I'm not going to give those details. But the initial offer was 10 grand to get me started on be on Trump's team. Okay? And I am not somebody with a massive audience. So I can only imagine the amount of money that changed hands for people that had really big audiences. Okay? Anyway, here's what I'm going to do, though. I'm going to take a break. And I was just going to do 1 hour, but I feel like we got to close this out with Chris Graves before I move on. And you know what? I'm going to record some more of the book tonight, and I'm going to put out the second chapter to everybody. It's gone out in advance copies to a few people, but the whole thing will be out there. It'll be on the website. It'll be on Patreon later today, so stick around. The Ocelli Effect with my friend Chris Graves, who is the host of Get Mad with Chris Graves, Sundays at 8 p.m. on Ocelli.com. That's when it's live, but it's always available via podcast. Is with me. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Support Chuck Ocelli at chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly.
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this, too, because, the Acelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
In denial. Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War by author Mike Swanson.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
My intro music might be a little loud tonight. I might have tweaked a dial here or there, but I'll fix it later. Don't worry. The Ocelli Effect, the second part of the Wednesday show, and I wasn't even sure if I was going to do a second hour, but the conversation's been fun with Chris, and I've gotten out of that bit of funk I was in, thinking about what I'm going to do with, you know, current events tonight. Screw it. We're not talking current events. We're talking about current trends in horror movies and stuff we've seen before. And let's be entertained. After all, life is a horror movie, and it's definitely containing more and more sci-fi. And these are two genres that I appreciate, although I don't necessarily want to live in the damn movies. All right.
And that's what we're doing.
But that's what we are doing. You know, speaking of that, and I'll just complete the discussion, so to speak, on Black Mirror, if you don't mind, because there is a lot that could be talked about there, but there's even a political aspect to it. Hang on a second. What in the world? Okay, now I've got the microphone all the way right. I'll tell you, I'm having little equipment problems here today. So probably better that I didn't bring on the guest and all that and have my microphone dive like it just did. Anyway, I have to replace. I mean, no offense to you, Chris, but I mean, if I screw it up, you and I can do it again easy. You know, I can't.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you. Like last night, I was kind of heartbroken because I was really ready to hear you guys talk some supernatural stuff, and your equipment was kind of doing similar things.
Well, that actually wasn't equipment. That was, anyway.
Or technology in general.
Technology gave me trouble there with the with the call-in lines, and there was nothing I could do about it. I mean, I apologize. And also,
oh, yeah, no, I didn't really have anything, you know, any revelations myself. But
okay.
To hear, like, Jimmy James maybe talk about how, like, his toilet was, like, possessed or something would have been kind of cool.
Listen, anytime Jimmy James tells a story, even if it's just 30 seconds long, it is entertainment in and of itself. And I don't have his skills. He says some of the funniest things ever. And he delivers them in just the Jimmy James way. Gotta love that guy. Anyway, I love all you guys who call in, by the way. But it's just the call-ins did not work out last night. And me and Christy went to a lot of interesting places. Mostly she did, but still, there's a lot to work with there, and we're actually going to continue that discussion next week on Tuesday, and I might get some advice about some recent health issues and things, which have not contributed to my level of enthusiasm either. It's not just that the news cycle sucks. I'm having issues, but anyway.
You're not alone, buddy.
I'm here.
I've heard a lot of different people. Talk about their health issues or, like, they know someone that's hurting and all that. Yeah.
Yeah,
you're not alone.
Almost everybody I know is having some sort of issue. That's why I don't even want to complain, frankly, because I know we're all seemingly simultaneously suffering from something. Anyways, let's get back to the fun discussion.
Horror
movies and awful things that technology can do. You know, the Black Mirror series, once again, there is some weirdness in there, too, that is different. And I didn't even bring these two things up, but since we did touch on the political, I don't even want to discuss it stuff last hour, how about this? There is the opening episode is more of a British thing. And I think initially it was an entirely British series, but they
it
ended
was.
Up.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
So, but they brought in this this whole story about a politician. And somehow he gets blackmailed into getting on live TV and having sex with a pig. On live TV. Okay.
And that's a season finale.
It should be a season finale. That's their opening gambit. So there's that. There was this other thing. Oh, there's another weird thing where there's this odd blackmail sort of game going on. Another thing about blackmail, people's security. And you think you're looking at a good guy at a certain point who is just caught up in this thing where somebody has decided to victimize him. And it turns out that probably nobody you've seen on the screen is worthy of saving. And somebody plays an elaborate game where they sort of hijack stuff. And this stuff has happened in real life to some degree where people have, you know,
like
turned around.
The gang stalking type stuff?
It's even weirder than that because it's like, imagine you get a message, okay? So you have some deep, dark secret or something that could really screw you over if it was leaked out onto the internet, right? Or if your friends and family suddenly got to know some horrible thing about you. Now imagine that somebody contacts you and says, look, I have pictures of you doing this horrible thing, and I'm going to make sure your mother, everybody you work for, everybody you know sees you do this horrible thing, unless you do what I say.
Wow.
And then, now, this has happened in real life more than once. It's not highly publicized, but people have done this where they've gotten into some information and, you know, turned around and threatened to do this or that. And some people have bit the bullet and gone to, you know, the FBI or whatever. And frankly, most of the time, these guys are sophisticated enough that the FBI, the Interpol, different policing agencies in different countries, they can't always catch these people. So anyway, they make threats and tell you, look, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to make sure that not only that happens, but you know that other illegal activity you participate in? I'm going to make sure the police have all the evidence they need because I have it right here. And so they say, okay, now go and deliver this package to this other guy. Right.
Wow.
So you do that. Now, you don't know it, but that other guy has been told, you show up and go get that package. Okay? Because I have evidence on you. And he's actually got multiple people going out there making these moves. Show up and do this. Give this person a ride. Okay, so eventually you're like, all right, this is like, you know, playing with people like chess pieces. But eventually it gets down to, well, look, you go there and kill this person. Because if you don't, if you don't, we'll make sure that you go to prison or you die.
Yeah.
Okay, this kind of thing.
Without a doubt, that has happened many, many times in real life.
I don't know about the murder thing because I've never seen evidence of it.
There's examples, but yeah, I hear
you. I've never seen evidence of it done with, you know, technology from a distance. Now, I've heard of people being blackmailed into murder schemes. You either kill this person or definitely I'm going to make sure your whole family's dead. This kind of thing has been done. But when somebody does it and they're totally faceless and you have no idea who they are, right? So it sounds like it's a very simple thing, but I'm telling you the complexities and nuances in it, really, really interesting. And I could not, I can usually predict, as I said before, the plots of these things. I'm like, okay, there's your bad guy. This person is actually, you know, a mole for the bad guy. This person is a fake. You know, like I was one of the people that,
Pleasantly surprised because they kept you on your toes.
Total Recall, right? Remember the movie Total Recall?
Oh, yeah, Schwarzenegger.
Okay, so that was a big shocker to a lot of people that, you know, his wife wasn't really his wife and all that. I had that clocked right away. Like, I didn't know whose wife it was, but just like, that woman's an actress, okay? This guy is actually somebody else. This is a problem, and these people that he's had introduced into his brain during the you know, the session when they set him up with the vacation. I'm like, those people are real. I knew that.
Same thing with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind too. Had me going, and then the twist at the end in a similar way.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is none of this had me going. I'm yawning because I know where it's going.
Yeah, you picked it. You knew what was going to happen. Yeah,
but I usually do that during TV shows, even TV series, stuff people, you got to see this movie, man. It's great. And I'm like, I already know what's going to happen.
As a screenwriter, I have the same ability.
Yeah. So, and I'm not a screenwriter of any kind, but I don't know what it is. These guys, and it's not even necessarily that it's just telegraphed. It's just, okay, I see the formula.
Yeah, exactly. It's a formula.
A lot of people thought The Departed was like really unpredictable. And I'm like, no, not at all. Like, the only surprise I had there is that, you know, is the one thing. I didn't expect the guy.
With Marky Mark?
Yeah, I didn't expect, who was it that was the,
the very end with Marky Mark.
No.
I didn't see that coming.
Matt Damon, I think it was. Wasn't it Matt Damon? Okay. Matt Damon was the police guy who takes over and he doesn't know, isn't that Matt Damon, or is that...
Well, there was Leonardo DiCaprio and Matt Damon, yeah.
Okay, DiCaprio's the one who's posing as the criminal, right?
Yep, yeah.
Okay, and the guy who winds up taking over after the superior is killed, that's Matt Damon, right?
It's Matt Damon, and then you had Mark Wahlberg was in there, too, with Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, but Matt Damon is the one that the guy walks in when he's got groceries and walks in behind him and kills him, right? Just shoots him in his apartment.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, I didn't think they were going to kill him.
Really?
I did not know. I did not think they were going to kill him. I thought that they were going to grab him. He was going to disappear. And they were going to, you know, put him somewhere else. Like, in other words, I thought the story was going to be is that he's going to go in, get a new identity, and now he's going to be another undercover cop somewhere else.
I can see that.
That's what I thought was going to happen. So when he actually got executed by a guy who showed up, you know, with his... You know,
Marky Mark. He's got his shoes are all wrapped up in foil or whatever.
Well, that's how you do it.
Exactly. you don't leave anything behind.
You know, and by the way, there's more to it than that. But that's part of what you got to do. You got to wrap up your shoes.
Yeah.
And okay. And the best thing, of course, is to wrap up your shoes with something that has. Anyway, you put a false footprint in it. Okay.
Exactly. All right. Yeah. Yep.
So and not your size. Duh. Anyway.
You have someone else's fingerprints on your on the gloves you're wearing.
That's well. Look, there's a lot of different ways to go with it. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to walk into a place with carpet or whatever, you leave a false shoe print. Okay, yeah. You guaranteed. You make sure also to leave a little bit of false dirt that comes from somewhere that's got nothing to do with nothing, so they can track that down.
Fibers.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now I'm giving away hints. But point is that I didn't expect them to kill him like that. I didn't. The rest of it, I totally saw coming. Even, what was it, Martin Sheen was the captain or the chief or whatever, or he was
running. Yeah, above Alec Baldwin and Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So all that's going on, I get it, all right. But people were like, how could you have seen all that coming? I did. And people always say to me, oh, you must have seen this before. Nah, I can just see it coming. Black Mirror several times. I do not see some key things that happen coming at all. I'm actually legitimately surprised. Even though I shouldn't be. I mean, afterwards I look at it and I go, I should have known. But I don't. There are some twists in
there. That's good writing, man.
Yeah, and there are twists in there. You know, a lot of writers also feel a need to wrap everything up, you know, neatly.
A nice bow.
And, you know, that's good in a way, yes. But in other ways, look, real life isn't like that.
So, and that's why I appreciate independent film so much back in the day, especially because they would not end the movie on a happy note, you know.
But it's not even always about the ending, you know.
Just unexpected stuff that you're like, oh, okay, that's clever.
Much wow. Like I know it's over discussed and over celebrated, but The Sopranos, some of the writing in there was brilliant for what it was missing, because. Yeah. You know, they never knew what happened to the Russian guy from the Pine Barrens.
That was a great episode, too, and it was like a standalone one.
But that's reality, is that sometimes you don't get to know what happens to everyone and everything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, in reality, this guy disappears. He never resurfaces, and you're expecting him to resurface, you know, before the end of the series. He never does. Nope. And it's very weird. You'd expect that either that's going to happen, or at some point you're going to get, you know, some news report expositionary device that's going to say, oh, by the way.
Yeah, that kind of answers it, yeah.
Yeah, oh, this guy was recently found, and he might have been an associate of, you know, an individual who's a club owner from Russia or blah, blah, blah. Something like that would have happened, and usually would.
Well, even the Sopranos finale, everyone was pissed off at. He left that up to the viewer to figure out what happened to Tony.
Well, I was pissed, but, you know, I didn't. It took me a little while to realize what that ending was. And frankly, they've interviewed, Patton and Chase several times regarding this. And, you know, he's been a little bit slippery about the answer. But the one podcast that was run by,
Michael Imperioli?
Yeah, Michael Imperioli and the other guy.
And the heavier guy, heavyset guy.
Steve Sciarippa. Okay.
There you go. Yep.
So those two guys had him on there, and he told the story that I'm satisfied is correct, which is that eventually you got to understand that this is him getting killed.
Yeah, Tony. I always thought that, and I was wondering why other people were, like, shocked. Well, because he mentioned it when he was on the boat. When he was, remember when they were fishing? Or they were on the boat. He goes, I think, like, when you die, it's just fade to black.
Well, yeah, but see, the reason why that's not necessarily definitive is because, think about it, he gets killed, right, you know, when he's going to the train store, and maybe he's talking about his own demise, which clearly he did see something coming. And, you know, you could argue, well, he didn't know he was going to die, he just knew he was going to get shot, but I tend to think he kind of knew he was screwed based on what I saw there. So I think he had a hint. It's not like if somebody does sneak up on you and
you're never going to see it coming.
Well, not only won't you see it coming, it's not even necessarily about death in the process either. You know, I've only ever been shot once. But when I was shot, I did not know that's what happened. I really didn't. It's not something you always know immediately. I mean, obviously, if somebody squared off in front of you with a pistol pointed at you and you hear a bang, you will assume you were shot, maybe. But
oh, yeah, yeah. Then you look down and people are like, you got blood coming out of you. You look down. Oh, wow, I do.
Well, but that's not, yeah. And some people go, well, the pain must be instant. Not true. Here's the thing. I was shot in the leg, basic. Well, leg, hip area, let's call it that. And I was hit. I had no idea I was hit. I didn't feel pain or nothing. What I felt, the first thing I felt is that my leg was wet.
Really?
I felt my blood on me first. That was the first sensation I got where it was like, and I knew that there were bullets flying, okay, because it was not the only shot that was fired, and I was not necessarily the intended target, although I think the person firing the, I believe
didn't
it
care if you lived or died anyway, but you weren't the motivation, right?
Yeah, I believe it was a 38, but excuse me, I don't mean to say a 38. I had in my head and I said the wrong thing. I believe it was a 9mm semi-automatic of some type, but I never got a good enough look at the gun, and my back was turned when I was hit. So. Thing is, I was not the primary target. So I knew bullets were flying. I knew things were being struck by bullets. Okay. And it was, you know, fairly loud. But frankly, my back was turned because I was running away on foot when I was hit. But I didn't know until after I stopped running. And I was standing, collecting, breathing heavy, and thinking I was safe and there was no more shots being fired. The next thing I knew is, why is my leg wet? And I reached down, and that was blood, and then it all registered for me. I had been hit. And I
usually you hear that it's like a burning sensation from most gunshot victims.
Yeah, well, the next thing was it burned.
Yeah,
no, it was burning next. That's true. Not really, and then after burning and a little bit and trying to deal with it, then the throbbing came. But it did not happen instantaneously. And other people I've known who have been shot, same kind of thing. And look, because there were multiple bullets being fired, I don't believe I actually heard the shot that hit me either.
Wow.
So now I've been told that before, is that a lot of times because I guess, you know, you're feeling pain at the time, you get that primarily, or you get the rest of what's going on primarily, and you don't necessarily hear the shot. It does not register. You don't have it in your mind that you heard it.
Or even the adrenaline pumping like might make it not, you might not even notice the pain at first either.
Right, which could literally either distract you or cause a pounding in your ear from your heart rate. But I get all that, and yet I got to tell you that, anyway, it's not like TV, folks. That's all I can tell you.
And the gunshot do not sound like TV gunshots either.
No. Well, sometimes they actually do. It depends.
No, I just know I remember going to the shooting range and they did not sound like what you would hear on TV.
Well,
they
I'll tell you
what.
They
sound like firecrackers almost.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what's completely unrealistic also is when these people fire guns inside of cars or small rooms. Holy crap, is that a lot louder than it seems like in the TV shows and movies.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, not the point. My point about this is that Sharippa's character gets shot in a model train, you know, hobby store.
Yep.
And he's clearly got some indicator that he's going to get shot. Now, did he know exactly he was going to die? Not necessarily, but I'm sure he heard some of the shots. There were multiple shots fired. It was two guys shooting him. But when you see him talking about that and saying, I don't think you know it, and this and that, and talking about going, getting killed, he's talking to Tony about it. Is he foreshadowing his own death, or is he talking about Tony's? Because in a way, you could say that throughout the series, various characters foreshadowed things for Tony, but they also foreshadowed a bunch of stuff for themselves. And
I like that because are not supposed to know the definitive answers.
Right.
They leave it, you know, you leave it up to interpretation, like any good song.
Right. So leaving out the finale, which is all this argument and people upset. And by the way, I was pissed that night because it was like, what happened to the cable?
Most people thought it was an Andy Kaufman thing where they were playing a joke.
I didn't think Andy Kaufman. Went out. I thought literally something went wrong at the cable at the wrong time. Because that's happened before to me where it's like, damn it, I missed the last part of this because it just happened to go out right then. That's happened to me before. So I literally thought, damn it, the cable just went out. Okay.
I think David Chase was having some fun for himself too, like in an Andy Kaufman kind of way.
Well, maybe, but the thing is, I don't even care about all that. I'm saying that throughout the series, you have no. Sorry. Seriously, I'm saying when it comes to this discussion, Andy Kaufman's a whole other thing. But when it comes to this discussion and TV and the way people write stuff, there are a whole bunch of open-ended things like this. Like, yeah. Okay, in the very first season, I think it is, Chris turns around and kills a guy. He says, oh, he's a Polak or whatever, but he's Czechoslovakian.
Yeah.
And, and he's like, my parents came here, and there's a problem with the garbage contract, and he kills the guy, right? And the guy winds up visiting him later. You will try our sausages in his weird dream. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
But they move that body around a couple of times during the course of the series, so it comes back up. Even in the, the second to last season, I guess, they're trying to get it off of Uncle Pat's farm because that's where they buried him after they moved him because he was having those bad dreams. But they... You never hear back about what happened with his family looking for him. Because he was sent there to represent the family interest. And he says before Chris shoots him, nah, they don't actually know I'm here. I'll see what we can accomplish. So it's kind of a little backdoor meeting. And it's left up in the air. Does his family know what happened to him? Do they suspect the Italians killed him? You know, it never comes back around because sometimes things don't.
That's right.
You know, you get a whole resolution out of the corrupt cop that winds up getting busted at the brothel.
Yeah.
Who's feeding Tony information because he owes him money. You get a whole backstory with that guy, and he even returns as another character, weirdly, in one of Tony's dreams, which I didn't like that stuff, by the way. I thought those were gigantic wastes of time, a lot of these giant dream sequences. That they put in that.
Even those have some clues, though, to the end of the series.
That was my point. There's not only is there clues to the end of the series, but there's clues to all kinds of stuff. Sometimes going backward in time, filling in something, and sometimes going forward, telling you what's going to come up. You don't know it when you're watching it, but starts to make sense.
Breaking Bad was huge with that, where they would have a scene that was going to be a couple of seasons down the road,
right. Like
a floating teddy bear that's half burnt. You don't know what the significance of that is, but they just play it just long enough, and then they go to real time. I used to love that.
Yeah, well, they would intermingle the timeline on Breaking Bad, which is another good thing. And they did that on The Sopranos a little bit. But these dream sequences, I did not like them overall. I think that they could have made more out of the existing timeline or even done flashbacks. I didn't mind the flashbacks they did in The Sopranos, which sometimes get to be too much over the course of a series.
Because then they're answering questions, but they're over answering them, you know?
Well, I don't mind it, but it's a slow drag. You're wanting the story to go forward. I'll give you a good example of something that they totally ruined all by themselves is The Walking Dead. They ruined it with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, here's a whole standalone episode where now we're going to explain something. And yes, we wanted that explanation, but I didn't need an hour of it. You know, it's like, let's go back and find out why it is Michonne and Daryl have these scars, you know, and they go and they show you, yes, but they take a whole other hour of your time
to
just answer that. And it's like, you know what? You guys are milking this now. I mean, there is a difference between, you know, a little stretch here or there because you're building suspense is one thing. But on the other hand, watching The Walking Dead and what finally caused me to stop watching it at all, because people had to convince me to watch that show. It was a phenomenon. But every time something is super popular like that, I got to tell you, Chris, I'm one of these guys who goes, you know what?
I'm Johnny Come Lately. I watch it usually, besides Breaking Bad, I usually watch it years after the fact.
Oh, I'm not Come Lately. I'm like, get the hell out of here. Because, you know what? Is that popular, then it probably resonates with way too many simple-minded people. I don't have time for it.
Well, seriously. There's that, too.
Like,
no, I agree.
Like, I don't care what people say. I don't like the Office. I never liked... Seinfeld?
I like that. Yeah, I like Curb Your Enthusiasm, so, yeah.
Now, Curb Your Enthusiasm, somebody had to
talk me... It's Seinfeld, but R-rated.
Yeah, but somebody had to talk me into watching that, and once they did, I'm glad they did. because it's good. It's got its purpose.
And then it showed who the brilliance was behind Seinfeld. It wasn't Jerry Seinfeld. If Larry David wasn't born, Jerry Seinfeld would still be doing, like, the club circuit.
Yeah, but it's not just all uptight, yuppie, you know, yuppie-ish nonsense, which is all that was with Seinfeld. It's like, and also the guy who played George.
Like Friends. I hated the show.
No,
Friends.
I hate that show. I absolutely can't stand that show. I have no use for it. A bunch of these shows, people are like, oh, you got to watch the Goldbergs. No, I don't.
Or Modern Family, because people would tell me, oh, Al Bundy, your favorite show, your favorite character. And I watched it, and I love Ed O'Neill, but I didn't see what was funny about that at all.
I see nothing useful in that. I see nothing useful in, Modern Family's a good example, but there was another one I was just thinking of, and I forgot now.
Parks and Rec.
See, there, that show is rather crappy. That to me just screams I'm a knockoff of something else.
Because it was supposed to be an actual spinoff from The Office originally.
Well, and it is the same design, and I get the concept. And I'm not one of these guys who goes, well, I like the original British one. No, Ricky Gervais has a very limited appeal to me, too. I like Ricky Gervais as a cartoon when he does those things with Carl. Outside of that...
I like when he... Oh, yeah. But I also like when he was making fun of, like, all the movie stars and stuff when he hosted the Golden Globes.
Yeah, all right, that's okay. But at a certain point, he's just not funny. And I'll tell you, he had a radio show and stuff in the UK, and I think he also did one on Sirius XM, whatever. I mean,
he was the first podcaster, too, officially.
I don't know if that's true.
No, he really had the first, originally what he called a podcast before anyone was doing like that type of thing.
He might have called it that, but what year was it?
This was like 2002. So, yeah, even before Kevin Smith and Joe Rogan came along. Yeah.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but Maria Heller was on
online. Oh, yeah. Yes. He had the internet radio thing, which is really, there's no difference really between a podcast and internet radio. But but you're right. She would probably be the first one, 99.
Well, but even it was a podcast. Her, and then, you know, there's a little dispute between them, but her and Jack Blood between 99.
Jack Blood, because he was her producer for that, right?
Well, he was her producer on AM and FM. And then the two of them, you know, become friendly and work together on this thing, which was brand new, this idea that they were going to, you know, have audio distribution online outside of music, you know. So, you know, and even then, that stuff was pretty rudimentary. And, you know, people loved
it. It's unheard of.
Yeah. But, you know, and there's a few others. I'm not saying that she was the absolute original, but she's one of the original people in independent media to do it, for sure. And way ahead of all these other guys. But look,
she doesn't get the credit she deserves either.
No, not at all. And, you know, and some people have gotten a little turned off to her because she's gone very left wing. And I was having that conversation with this. I did speak to a couple of independent media people off air recently that I did not expect to be having conversations with. And one of them will absolutely have absolutely nothing to do with my show or me or anything else at the end of that conversation. But that's okay. I don't mind that. And also talked to a friend who is in that mix also.
I don't see why people can't just have a conversation if you don't agree with them. That makes the conversation more interesting to me, at least.
Yeah, this wasn't about agreement with me, though. This was about, this was about, like, I don't know. They have this odd idea about who it is I'm associated with and why.
I got you.
And it's just really unpleasant. It got really unpleasant, actually.
Well, then you don't need them, then.
Yeah, no, I don't. You know? It's fine. I'm not upset. It's just it was weird that I had these conversations at the same time. But anyway, when I was talking to somebody about her off air, they were kind of like, you know, what is this that she's gone, you know, very left-wingy? And I was like,
She used to be. She used to be all about the fake. You know how fake the left right paradigm was. So I get kind of like,
She still is. It's just the
But then she's like telling people that they should go to the other party then and not the Trump party. And I'm like, what?
But
the other party's just screwed up.
Yeah, but she's kind of resigned herself to the idea that look, if you're going to participate in that nonsense.
The lesser of two evils.
Yeah, and a lot of people did that. I mean, this was one of my main complaints about AJ over there in Austin, is, you know, is the left-right paradigm is false. The left-right paradigm is false, but the right-wing paradigm is actually not as false as the left-wing paradigm.
Right.
You know, like, and I
they're either false or they're not.
Yeah,
you know?
It's pick a lane, and I stay there with, you know, I mean, to me, over the past 5 years or so, it's more obvious that the right wing is more more loaded with hypocrisy and things that I would reject outright. But it's not like,
but then you look at the left and they're just
well, there's no coherence anyway. There is no left. See, that's the funny thing to me is that I look at it and go, you don't even have a good attempt at faking an opposition. It's not even good.
I know your choice for Canada is the Crypt Keeper. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, right. I mean, in wrestling terms, like in old school wrestling terms, right? This is like bringing out S.D. Jones. Remember him? S.D.
Yes,
Jones, the wrestler. Never won a match. I don't think I ever saw S.D. Jones win a match on his own, you know? But they would bring him out, and it was like, you knew he was going to lose. You knew that he had nothing to really offer, and they talk about S.D. Jones as an experienced veteran who's been around a long time and a very good wrestler, and this is what the announcers would tell you, but you knew he was going to lose. You knew he sucked. You knew the guy was, I mean, I don't know if he would have won in an actual, you know, if people were engaged competitively, but S.D. Jones, Special Delivery Jones, I mean, his name was bad, his presentation was bad, and he always lost, and people would go, oh, you never know, S.D. Jones might... What? Come on. Anyway,
he was no Fred Blassie.
Now, I would have rather seen Fred Blassie get in there because, anyway, he was at least entertaining for a second. Although I think it was a bad idea to have him do the Pencil Neck Geek song. But anyway, I think they could have done something better with him. You know?
Yeah.
It was sort of like the Grand Wizard of Wrestling, that guy. And I was like,
yeah, he was.
Isn't that like a Ku Klux Klan sort of phrase? Right?
Yeah, the Grandmaster. You don't want to be the Grandmaster of anything.
Well, you don't want to be the wizard. I mean, a Grand Wizard is literally a KKK thing. I mean,
it is, yes.
So why are you doing that? I mean, are you going to bring Klan wrestlers in? I mean, they never brought full-on Nazis.
Right.
Where they called them Nazis into the ring because that was going too far.
That was more a Geraldo would bring on the Nazis.
Well, right. You know, but anyway, I don't know how we got here. Oh,
and even then, there was a cartoon. It wasn't real Nazis, I don't think.
No, I mean, Geraldo.
Oh, yeah, you brought up, the Maria Heller, because I was saying that Ricky Gervais, a lot of people think, you know, coined the term podcast.
So
it doesn't really matter. We veered away from the horror movie stuff.
Yeah, no,
because I'm an idiot.
But no, not because you're an idiot. Why do you do that? Don't do that.
I'm just kidding. The Sopranos, you were telling me the...
If you were an idiot, believe me, I would not be able to talk to you this long. I'd be fed up with you. All right? Anyway, if you really were an idiot, I unfortunately would say, look, man, you're a nice guy and everything, but, you know, I say this to people off air and horrify Mrs. O when I do. It's like, you know, you're just effing stupid. I mean, that's all. So, you know, it's not your fault. It's just who you are, and I can't handle it. I would tell you that.
Yeah, I try.
I would tell you that if that was the case. I'd just be like, dude, you're a nice guy and everything, but you're stupid. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't talk to you. I can only take so much of you because you're stupid. That's what I would say.
Exactly.
But this is not...
And now you have, so now we know.
No,
so
no. No. That was a for instance... So, I mean, people used to take clips of my show and excerpt stuff like that. Maybe somebody will, but I'm not doing it. And I am by no means in any way, shape, or form calling Chris Graves stupid. You do have an ADD.
Yeah, someone out there, please take that out of context. Because I will use that as a ringtone every time he calls me.
That's fine, too. But you know, Chris, he's definitely got an ADD issue. But outside of that, see, I'm blunt.
Huh?
You definitely, yeah. What'd you say? I wasn't paying attention.
A car.
I know.
Just went by.
I know. Squirrel.
Anyway, so, no, you were talking about, you were on to something, but then I went and started talking about other crap. The Sopranos and the dream stuff got kind of, it was filler.
To close out on the Maria Heller thing, just really fast, and then we'll get back to the Sopranos.
I love Maria Heller when she does the news and her stuff with Dave McGowan.
I love a lot of the stuff she's done, and I don't necessarily agree with everything Maria ever says, but I love her to death, and I call her mom. Thing is, she is, she is a bit left-wingy, and she always has been. You know, when they did the first Earth Day, they didn't call it Earth Day. Maria was there. No, but Maria was there when they did that in New York, okay? You know, you're talking about somebody who has gone to prisons and sat down with, you know, and taught the medicine wheel to Native Americans in high-security prisons, okay?
That's awesome.
This is somebody who is definitely not on the right-wing side of things. But that doesn't mean that she's bought into the entirety of the left-wing nonsense that's out there being, you know, pumped by the corporate media. She's not there. Yeah. Okay, but some people, because their automatic reaction to somebody who, like, you know, is really a cringing verbally out loud at, you know, Donald Trump, first of all, which has caused, I mean, I found out recently that that there was, some things that cost me because I went on a very long tear of talking about Trump constantly. And apparently that not only cost me money, but it cost me a position among other independent media people, among other alt media people, directly, that it cost me.
Right.
Not just monetarily, okay? It cost me entirely. My entire thing. I might have not even started my own network had I not gone on a tear about Trump, because I would have been involved in something else that that actually would have paid me fairly. And
you know what? You still have your soul. So there you go.
Yeah.
You won in the end, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. I guess we'll see, because the end ain't here yet. So thing is, though.
You know me. So there you go.
Well, there you go. Look,
you're welcome.
I'm not. But the whole point is that regardless.
Maria Heller is a sweetheart. She's awesome. And she's been around for a long time and seen a thing or two about a thing or two.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, I love her to death. No sign of disrespect is going to come from me to Maria. But going back to something that you just mentioned, however, God, you keep me on my toes. I got problems remembering what I was going to say by the time you're done knocking me off track.
But you really thought Chud was not a good movie, though. That makes me sad.
No, I'm not into it. Just not into it.
Really?
Yeah.
I was just kidding.
No, I'm just, I mean, it's...
I gotta rethink this whole thing.
Maybe so. But, look...
So Maria, she's awesome.
Yeah, I was transitioning away from Maria in the discussion. But, okay, anyway.
Dude, I thought you had one more thing to say about her.
Yeah,
I kept talking about Judd and Married with Children and Night Court.
Yeah, I was creating a transition there. Can you remember what you said 2 minutes ago, or no? Just a question, a random question.
Yeah, it was something about Jim Jarmusch is not as artistic as you might think.
And then he goes all the way out there. All right, so you don't want me to be...
No, I do. Okay. No, go on. I'll behave.
Oh, man.
I went to all public school and had sugary cereal as a child of the 80s. So, I mean, what can you expect from me?
I don't know, man.
Not much.
I don't know, man. I'm a little older, but not...
I was raised by cinematic serial killers. Cut me a break.
Cinematic serial killers. All right. If you say so. What can I do? I'm not going to argue. So...
Okay, so no, but seriously, you have... You know, okay, so
no,
let's backtrack.
Regarding...
And Ricky Gervais sucks. All right.
In between there and where we are now, there was something you brought up that was a really great point that I was going to elaborate on, but I'll leave it alone now.
Maria Heller. No, that's right. You know, it had to do with Maria.
Yeah,
and
I was I was transitioning away from Maria. The thing is that...
I keep bringing it back.
Yeah, no, I was offered stuff. I brought that up.
Oh, yeah.
And, and I was talking about something there that
and Trump.
Yeah, and the whole Trump thing.
And then I chimed in and said that you still have your soul.
Okay, well, you know, yeah, there's that, but I'm still not quite at the... I forget it. Doesn't matter.
No. You got me. How am I going to be able to sleep, dude? Okay, all right.
Just forget it. Doesn't matter. We'll just let it go because you've blown me totally. This is, and by the way, most people can't. You've blown me out of the water. If I can finish a phrase,
Fred Blassie?
No, not that.
Oh, But what was it? Oh, the eel. You said the back. Yeah, the wrestling parable, right?
Yeah, no, I was past that too. It doesn't matter. Well,
I don't get good points usually, so this is a big moment.
This was a really good point. Now I just can't remember what it was. It's okay. It's okay.
You were offered a lot of money, and you would have been if you didn't talk about Trump so much.
Yeah, I already know. If I had gone and talked about him more, but been on the positive side of things, but that's not even again the point of it. There was.
Are you chewing on?
No. But there was two guys, which, by the way, this is the point from last hour I got flushed out of, is that there were two guys that tried to tell me about that at the time. And one of them was Roger Stone. And the other one, I'm not sure what to do with this, but the guy told me in 2014 that effectively Trump is going to be your next president, right? And
really?
And I said, look, I don't know where you're getting this from. And at the time, I don't think he'd even gone down the escalator just yet.
yeah. Of course, that was on The Simpsons, by the way, years before.
yeah. But there's a lot to unpack about The Simpsons. But back to this thing about, he hadn't gone down the escalator yet. Of course, I was aware of his exploratory committees and his other looks at running all the way back into the 90s, by the way.
Well, actually, him and Jesse Ventura, because he went up to Minnesota while Jesse was a governor, and there's a whole press conference where they were going to run on the Libertarian part ticket.
Yeah, but screw the Ventura story. I'm talking about there were independent exploratory committees that were hired and did research in order to explore his options, not just for the Libertarian Party, but for other parties, various ones, including Democratic. Democratic Party, not the Green Party, but there's something like the Green Party.
Oh, the Whigs?
No. It's something like the Green Party, but I think doesn't even exist anymore. Ross Perot's party, I forget the name of that thing now, but he actually did form a party briefly. So there was that. There was Libertarian. All these different parties, though, there were exploratory committees that were supposed to examine and game it out. And go ahead and interview people and take a look at the, take polls and all this other stuff. And that stuff started in the early 90s when he was...
I did not know this part.
Yeah, Wow. Well, and a lot of it was done only regionally in the Northeast, and this is why I know about this. This was done in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and New York primarily, but it also extended all the way up to New England and, to the... What is at the tip there? I guess that's New Hampshire, right?
Maine and New Hampshire.
And New Hampshire. Okay. So I know that it covered that entire area all the way down to like D.C. and, basically the northeastern quarter. The northeastern quarter of the country, not just the seaboard, up and down the Atlantic. So I know that they had explored that. They had actually sent people out, canvassed in key areas and all this stuff. They had done that before. So I knew about all that. So it wasn't a shock to me that the guy would run. But this individual told me about it. Now, why is this special? People speculate about a lot of things. I mean, frankly.
Because presidents seem to be selected way years in advance.
Well, yeah, that's the point I'm getting to. But the thing is, you talk to certain people. I mean, if I go back in my own history, even before I started my radio show, there were people telling me that people like myself who don't comport immediately with the standard paradigms and things like that, that we would all be tracked down and rounded up via all the information that's on the Internet about us and all the information that's been gathered by the NSA. And that our own government should have already put us in concentration camps, people like me. But also, later on, I heard from people that, by the time we're done with 2013, that all people that are insistent on owning their own guns and Christians and all that, they would all be indeed rounded up and put into these FEMA camps and probably quietly exterminated. And there were people.
So you're saying that they basically kept calling your bluff every time?
Well, no. What I'm saying is that there are people that have told me about these different, watershed events that are coming, that they have inside information, that they know absolutely. there were people that told me we'd be at war with certain countries by now, that it's absolutely in the plans. They're just making it happen. We're going to be engaged in a full-on conflict here, there, the other place. Russia was one of those places that we should have been in conflict with. We should have already been back into a Korean War, according to some people. There are various parts of the African continent, because I've talked about my overall idea that I think that if we do have an official beginning to a third world war, I think people will say that it began on the African continent this time. I've had people tell me that we would be engaged in full-on conventional warfare with parts of South America by now, etc., etc. Okay? They've told me about candidates that have been selected, projected, should be the people in there, including some really odd dark horse type people like Anthony Weiner, before his problems, which we all well know about with the the pictures, let's say. That guy is supposed to have already been vice president, according to some people's scenarios. Okay? Stuff like this. Hillary was supposed to come in as a vice presidential candidate. And, you know, the whole thing that people have been talking about the past couple of years in right-wing circles, that Joe Biden was supposed to get in. And when he was first selected, I heard this a lot in the right-wing conspiracy sphere, that not only was Biden meant to go in, he's selected and everything else, but what they're going to do is remove him either for his health or he's going to be killed. And yeah. Kamala's going to come in. And because the sympathy from the slain leader, we're going to have a whole bunch of legislation. You see where they're reaching from, right? We're going to have a whole bunch of outrageous legislation that's going to be pushed through, because the nation's going to be kept distracted by the assassination of Joe Biden. People have very seriously mapped this stuff out. There are some people that told me that nuclear weapons would be detonated on the border of Arizona and I forget which other state, that this would happen. And what we would learn is that it was because of the illegal immigrants that came from Mexico. And what we're going to find out is that it's actually been an invading army all along. They're going to be activated, and that'll be the first volley in a major war with Mexico. Okay, a lot of these crazy predictions I've gotten from people, and some of them might have better views of information about secretive things and stuff like that than your average person.
Right.
They tell me they're crazy theories. I was a former intelligence officer for this or that, and some of these people you've heard on my show before, some of them you have not. But they would tell me this stuff. Well, anyway, there's this one guy, though, that... I hate to use the word former in this case at all, because there's no such thing. But let's just say formerly, it's a matter of public record that he definitely worked with, not for necessarily, with the CIA.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm not going to tell you his name. I'm not going to tell you any of that. But I will tell you this. He has made some of the wildest of these predictions. He hasn't given me a wrong one yet.
Wow.
Okay. One of the stranger ones was the Trump thing. But you know what? Hang on just a minute. I'm going to maybe go to a little break here so I can find out something.
Okay. Yeah. No, he's keeping everyone on their toes.
No, it's okay. Like it. No, it's okay. I'm not going to go to the break because I thought I was going to be interrupted, and I'm not. So anyway, physically, like literally in studio, I thought I was going to be interrupted by something, but apparently I'm not. Anyway, so let me go back to this, what I was telling you. The one thing that I was told in 2014 is that this guy's your next president. And I said, that doesn't make any sense, and I don't believe you. As I've told many people, whether they're telling me about the nuclear weapons detonation or... they've told me about something is going to be called an accident. I've been told about...
Project Bluebeam.
Well, no, not like that. Nobody's gone to that. But they've told me about there's going to be a terror attack. We're going to have the new 9/11.
Yeah.
And some of these people, again, I know know people and know things, but they're just making crazy statements to me. And they do it off air. A lot of people communicate weird things to me. And they make me go through some trouble to communicate with them, honestly. Okay?
Yeah.
This one guy, I even said it back then on my show, right? Or I said, you know, this guy gave me this prediction. It's kind of crazy. And I might have to start believing him more if he's right. Because to me, Trump being selected in 2014 was just beyond ludicrous. I to my mind, it's like everybody who is in the Northeast, who's been in his proximity, anybody who's from Jersey, New York, whatever, is going to know this guy is nothing but a criminal, hypocritical scumbag, A. B, they're also going to know that he's a con artist. He has no real ideas of his own. Even the criminals he does business with laugh at him. Yeah. Because he's just one of these guys that's useful because he's in a privileged position. No matter how he loses his money, he doesn't lose his money. Okay, yeah, his businesses change hands, whatever. He gets a new wife. All right.
Dude, I thought, I would think it was ludicrous too if I was told back then, because around that time, he was doing 2 a.m. infomercials.
Well, he was not really, and that's the other thing, is everybody talks about his hit TV show. I guess it was kind of big, but it's not like it was the big TV show. He was just successful as a reality idiot.
Yeah.
That's all it was. You're fired. That's your big thing. Okay, that's it. So, to me, it was ludicrous. Anyway, I'm going to tell you a couple things, though, that this guy did tell me about. In advance, mind you, of the event. Okay? That's one of them. He told me about some stuff previous to that. All right? Like, there was the attempt, the terrorist attack, the attempt in Times Square. Told me about that in advance. He told me about a couple of other things, like before they happened, and literally, this is going to sound messed up, but literally named the individual. Okay, or
that got finger for it.
Like literally told me, okay, it's going to happen in. I'm going to pick a place out of thin air here because I'm not going to give you the real event. It's going to happen in Florida. It's going to happen at a place called this. And there's going to be two guys. And they're going to be involved in it, but it's going to take them a little time to figure it out.
Huh.
And then maybe 6 months later, 2 months later,
it happens.
The thing happens. And I mean very specific. And he doesn't make a lot of wild claims. Okay? But he's recently reached out to me again. And I got to tell you, a couple of things have really, really clicked. One of the things that clicked, it's going to sound really messed up and like I'm a nut, but why not? I've been putting out a little bit of crazy material lately anyway, so let's go all in. You know, the journalist Khashoggi.
Yeah, he had Trump connections up the wazoo.
Okay, forget the Trump connections.
All right.
Here are two things that I was told, okay, in 2017. That guy was going to be murdered. And the Epstein thing was going to come back around. And he wasn't going to survive his incarceration. Two totally unrelated things, but he said they would be during a similar time period. He wasn't sure of the exact time period, but that these things were going to happen. And even though Epstein had walked before, this time he's not going to walk. He's not going to be able to walk, is the way he put it.
Right.
Now, he's told me a bunch of other things, and I'm not going to bring them up here. But as time is coming to some of the stuff that he talked about with me before, okay, there is an event coming at the end of this year. There's an event that will occur next year.
Yep.
And there is an event in 2024. Key, huge events. And I'm debating as to whether to put them out as any sort of predictions, because I don't actually have knowledge on this stuff. This is just the guy who has been right. Okay.
Just from a research standpoint, I don't want to pat myself on the back because it's really nothing to to be proud of, but not the COVID thing so much, but I pretty much called the race riots of 2020 and the supposed insurrection way before it happened, just based on my research of the past trends.
Well, see, that's the thing, is when you talk about some of those sort of events, like me, I argue that, first of all, the race riots were nothing. Okay, that's a lot.
Oh, yeah, no, but the scenario that was being pushed out is what I meant.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing, is that this guy actually tells me, this is the weirdest thing, and I'm now actually very creeped out by it, because there's been a bunch of minor things that he told me about that he should not have been able to predict in any way, shape, or form that I can figure out. He's not even, like, active as far as I know. But seems to have... It's almost like I've got a Q who actually knows something, okay?
Right.
And, yeah, it's not just, you know, some douche that probably just owns servers in the Philippines, all right? It's not that.
A 4chan guy with a lot of time on his hands.
It's not that. It's a guy who tells me, look, these things are going to happen and they're going to be important. And it's, like I say, it's one or two events a year. And I now have a track record of over, let's see. Let's see, 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. We have now gone through 7 years because the event, the bigger event for 2022, has not occurred. And the clock is running. So I'm going to tell you what. If this guy's correct about 2022, and the big event that'll happen before the end of the year. If he is, I think I'm going to have to turn around and take some of the notes that I've kept and create a very serious prediction section based on this, and I don't know what I'm going to call it. Tell you something else, too, as I'm thinking about changing formats on my show so that we don't do one-hour discussions. I know that would be very hard whenever I decide to bring Chris on impromptu, as I have. Because I need an hour to wrangle. It's sort of like Christy, too. You know, you and Christy have that in common, by the way. I can't entirely control the flow of the conversation. Even though you guys are my friends. It's impossible. You know, last night...
She's a nice lady, so I'm in good company.
No, I love her to death. I mean, she's great and everything, but I couldn't stop her from digging in deep on MK Ultra. When I was
that was the first time I've ever heard you guys almost come to blows, but not really. But
no, there was no argument. I was just trying to say, look, that is actually, to my mind, child's play compared to the overall grid, which has existed and is actually ancient, where, you know, people are being restricted and kept in different states of controlled opposition one way or another. And of course, if you just want to join in with the narrative and be a fan of the circus, you can do that, too. But but on the other hand, if you want to be part of the opposition, they already have scripts for you, too. And they always have. And long before there was an America, and those scripts weren't even in English, I assure you, there has always been this thing. So long before MK Ultra was anything, there has been a mind control system in place, and it's always there. That's what I was trying to get to with Christy. I couldn't even break in with that when she was going on and on about the TV and all that, which is all valid, but at the same time...
This is a smaller part of what the whole overall picture.
Well, to me, it's like, you know what? I hate that grocery store because their produce is always rotten. All right, fine, but let's look at the rest of it. Okay, you know, the produce is up front. It's in the front of the store. It's probably the thing you need the most, and it's the thing that's the easiest to get because it's right there. But you know what? You go digging around in the rest of the store, you're going to find that there's things that have been there a long time.
Yeah.
Okay? And, you know, you got to consider just the art of stocking a shelf where they put things at certain levels on the shelf in order to make sure that they sell a certain way and all this.
That's all engineered because I used to have to do that. You have to pull it forward.
Oh, yeah. That's your front face and
front facing. Facing. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally the phrase front face. And not even like a fully, like, you know, evolved English phrase or anything. It's just front face is what they used to say. And all of that stuff, product placement.
Certain companies pay more, so their products are front and center, too.
Yeah, yeah, but at the end of the day, it's about planograms, where they literally come up with these plans. This is where this should be, and it's at a certain height. This is how many rows. This is what you put it next to. There's actually a whole engineering process behind that.
Yep.
Okay.
Much like society.
Even the choice of lighting, the choice of colors on a logo, all these things have significance, is my point. So it's not just what they're playing for you on the loudspeaker in the grocery store. It's literally the packaging, the way things are laid out, the contents of it have a purpose. In other words, there is a full-fledged and completely fleshed out grid of controls there. So I wanted to go beyond MK Ultra and the nonsense and the hidden messages and, you know, is your music evil and are there key phrases? And I want to go beyond that. So right. that was the thing that we kind of got stuck on. But I love her. It was a great thing. And she was right about all the stuff she said. It's just that I couldn't even get in there. But anyway, back to it. I'm thinking about changing the format of my show where I hate to say it, but I'm going to take it from Jack, where he's decided that he wants his show split up into these 30-minute pieces. And he does things in 30-minute clips, where I've done things for an hour, simply because I think I need to evolve with people's attention spans. Yeah. You know, going for a full hour is fun, enjoyable. I am allowed to develop a conversation and all that. But I think taking the break at the half-hour point might be beneficial for everybody. So yeah. I'm thinking that I'll start doing 4 30-minute segments. And that does mean that although people have been trying to convince me for years to start just doing 30-minute podcasts, that does mean that it could be split up into 30-minute pieces for me. Now, as far as Aaron's show goes or anybody, they can decide if they want to go, you know, 10-minute clips. I would not be pleased, but they can decide to do it their own way. If they don't want to take a break, I would discourage that, too. You got to have a break somewhere. But honestly, everybody can format their show the way they want to, including you. I've encouraged you to go with 1 hour to start with, but that may evolve. That may change. I mean, frankly, it's not even necessarily that we got to pin it down to the hour mark. We could do, I don't think this would work for you. Okay, so this is not a good idea for you, but if you wanted to do it, I would try to work with you on making 3 15-minute segments. Which would be a 45-minute show altogether, yeah, or in 15-minute bites. Or
well, let me ask you this, though.
Or if you want to do 6 of them.
We're going to have a really, really cool guest on. How would I go about doing that if it's all split up like that?
Well, obviously, you just go to, like a terrestrial radio show like Clyde Lewis does. That guy's got a break every 7 minutes.
Okay.
I don't like it. But, yeah. But you know, we may, I'm just saying, we're going to experiment here, some of us. And if you want to stick with your 1 hour thing, do it. It's fine by me. If you want to expand and do 2 hours, cool. You could do it exactly the way I do it now most of the time, although I'm overtime right now. And I'm going to leave this intact because this conversation is solid and fun enough. And I might even add another break. What the hell? I mean, you're not going anywhere, Chris, right?
Nah, I'm having fun, actually.
Right, so you know what? Maybe we'll extend this just a little more. Not a lot, but a little more, okay? And that's just for the listeners out there. If you're hearing us on the live stream or if you're trying to figure out if your podcast is about to run out, we got some more. So I'm going to go with it. And in fact, I think what I'll do is take a quick break. But before I do it, I just want to say that, yeah, I think what we all need to do is maybe examine whether it is we need to remain with the old format. It might be a freshening, a refresher for me with my show. It'll be a lot easier, tell you that, and might provide me with some more options where you could have, you know, let's just say I do this 30-minute shots, 3 guests on a show. I'm not going to try and do that all the time. But I could, say, put 3 guests on a show easily, give them each a half hour. Or almost a half hour, you know, bring it down to like, say, 28 minutes. So I've got time for the spots. And then maybe every night, my last half hour is a closer where I just talk to you guys and wrap everything up. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. But, this is, and I'm going to start playing with the times beginning next week. So that's what I'm going to do with my show coming up. I'm also considering as to whether I'm going to need to leave the Monday show off or not, because the recording times with the book have been a little bit odd, let's say. And through no fault of anybody's but mine, I had trouble. We tried to record this past Monday, me and Chris. And frankly, I was having, trouble reading. Not that I don't know how to read, but... You know, that I don't, that I was having.
I know, it got kind of awkward when I had to show you, like, you know, how to read the thing back, you know?
Okay. Well, if that's the story you're going with, I'm cool.
That never happened, people. I know.
No, it's okay. But the thing is that, you know, I was trying to do this, and frankly, after taking a couple of pauses, I said to you, man, I said, look, you can be honest with me, this kind of sucks, doesn't it?
And I didn't want to tell you the truth.
No, but that's what I wanted. So it's okay. And you were like, well, look, I didn't want to say it. No, I didn't want
to. Yeah, but I want people to tell me the same thing, too. I want to know if this is substandard or not. Not to say that what you did was substandard, but I'm saying, me personally, I want someone to call me out on it if it's something really important, you know?
Yeah, but it just wasn't going well. It sounded bad. I was jumping around. I was misreading stuff and going back over stuff that I shouldn't have. And skipped over other things. So,
yeah, there's a whole paragraph that you left out, right?
Yeah, I left out a paragraph, and then I reread the same point three times. That's the point at which I stopped you. I said, wait a minute, I've already said this a couple of times. I'm screwing this up.
And I wondered what you were doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Bag this. I'm not even going to try and edit this. Nothing. Screw it. So we didn't get anything useful out of the Monday night recording. But you've also told me that we can record at some other time, so maybe we'll have to get the Monday.
Let's do it right, you know? Let's do the make it awesome, you know?
Well, listen, I don't know if I can make it awesome, but I got to...
No, but you know what I mean.
But I got to make it at least tolerable in my mind that this is acceptable. So yeah. I'm not going to put out crap, especially because I have requested from, people to invest in this, to pay... To get, you know, the good draft of this, the good audios out of this, and they're going to get them, and they're going to get a bonus. You know, as many bonus audio book or audio pieces as I can are going to go just to the people who are subscribing to the audio book stuff, either on Patreon or on Ocelli.com. So I'm going to do that, and it's going to get done one way or another. I mean, even if I got to get somebody else to read it because I'm that bad, it's going to happen.
No, you've been great. It was just something in the air. Like it was really hot and humid.
It just wasn't clicking.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not gonna serve you guys up anything that I think is substandard. Nothing I ever do, by the way, in my own mind is ever going to be great. But I'm not going to give you something that I think is bad. Especially, yeah. I mean, look, occasionally I know, you know, some of my stuff is bad. The podcast, whatever. I try to keep that at a very serious minimum. So. I do my level best to avoid it.
This is your life story, too. You know, you want to get it down right.
Well, you know what? I'm not important anyway. Again, I'm not important. The idea that this is, you know, look, it's an important project to me, whatever. Yeah. But the thing is, I just don't want to give it to you guys in a bad form. That's all it is. So I'm doing everything I can to avoid that. And that means that I'm having to go back and do a lot of editing sometimes, or maybe I've got to totally just discard a recording because it just didn't come off right. Thankfully, you were willing to agree with me. This is not going well. I cannot stand it when somebody sits there and with a straight face tells, no, you're doing great. And I'm like, you know, look.
It's like you're not helping me at all.
You're not helping by lying to me about it. I know you don't want to hurt my feelings, but don't lie to me about it. I don't mean you, Chris. I mean anybody. Don't lie to me. You know, look, I'd rather somebody goes, no, man, that sucked. You need to redo it. And that was awful. I'd rather hear that because it's like, okay.
Because that's when you know the person actually cares.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. I know you care about this project. And I'm also going to introduce some other people into it, although I haven't had anybody bite at the right time. But if you are interested, you listening out there, if you're interested in becoming part of the book project and you want to be on with Chris because... I initially had two guys picked out, and I ended up with just Chris, and you know what? I'm happy that way. It's much better that I have just Chris, but I want to switch things up, too. I'm going to bring
my
son.
I'm lonely, guys. Come join me.
I'm going to bring my son in on this. I'm going to, Mrs. O has been on one of them. I haven't released that one completely yet, but that'll be released tonight for everybody who is either subscribed on the website or on Patreon. I sent it out in an email already, so some people got it in an email, but only a select few people got it in the email. And those are the people that, in my mind, had requested it that way. But either way, it's going to be available tonight. So, you know, sometime before the sun rises where you are, it'll be available. And I want to make sure that we get at least two of these out a month. I want to make sure that they are at least presentable in my mind and presentable to whoever it is I have along to listen. If you want to become involved in this and you want to be one of the people who sits and listens to me do a reading and then participates in the after discussion on a chapter, not necessarily the whole thing, but just on a chapter, by all means, either email me, info@ocelli.com, that's fine, or you can reach out to me on Twitter, or even Facebook, though I do despise Facebook. If that's what you got, you can do that, and maybe I'll put the number to text me on before I wind up ditching this device I have. I might ditch a device soon, but before I do, maybe I'll put out the text number if you want to get in touch with me one way or another. You can be a part of it by being on Skype or on a telephone while I'm doing the reading one of these nights live. So, because I'm going to work on this and we're going to get more work done. I've actually got a whole other mini book recorded already that needs a lot of editing, but I'm not in a rush to get it there because it's the bonus for August and it's not August yet. So... another bonus is there's a full audio book in the audio section on Ocelli.com, which is not written by me at all, has nothing to do with me. And I have a couple of other small ones that are going to go in there. I'm thinking about doing War as a Racket.
Wow.
And maybe a couple of other relative pieces of literature that I think they won't bust my balls too much copyright-wise if I offer them to you for free as part of the package. But also some original material by an unpublished author. There is the possibility of some poetry. I'm trying to secure permission for a poetry book, a short one. I'm going to add audiobooks here. So you're going to get multiple audiobooks, the two from my book, two chapters each month at least, and then an additional something in the audiobook section that is not there for everybody. That's only there for people who support it. So that's what's going to happen. Now I've talked way too long. I'm going to take a break, though, and return with Chris Graves, and we'll finish out this show whenever the hell I feel like it. Because what the hell, it's Wednesday. We're unscripted, unplanned, and now I got to give Chris a chance to go over anything that he might have missed or decided that we got cut off on. I want to give him a fair airing, and also you should listen to Get Mad with Chris Graves, which runs live 8 p.m. Eastern on Sundays on Ocelli.com, but it's also already a tab up on the website. Go there and see the last three episodes, listen to them. They are interesting and diverse, and only 1 hour to an hour and a half long each one. So anyway, Get Mad with Chris Graves, and Chris Graves and I will return after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Support Chuck O'Chilly at chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too, and look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly.
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this, too, because, you know, the O'Chilly Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his the stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, you know, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
O'Chilly.com.
Salvation.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles sort of really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Everyone, I have a brief announcement to make. Jesus was black, Ronald Reagan was the devil, and the government is lying about 9/11. Thank you for your time, and good night.
No! This can't be true!
Ochili.com.
That, my friends, is part of the introduction to Get Mad with Chris Graves, which initially was recorded, the music you hear there, very crappily recorded in a garage somewhere in New Jersey in, let me think here, 1991, I think? By a band I was in, and it just happened to be one of the things I offered to Chris as intro music, and he liked it. So Get Mad with Chris Graves runs live anyway on Ochili.com at 8 p.m. Eastern on Sundays now. And if you click on the tab up at the top of Ochili.com, any page, you'll see there's a Get Mad with Chris Graves tab. And there's only 3 shows there right now, but we plan on many, many more in the future. So you can keep up with them there. And he just happens to be with me on this extended Wednesday night where we've had a free-flowing conversation. I've gotten knocked off track several times. We've talked about... We've talked about horror movies and nearly anything except the news, although sadly we did kind of cover the little news, but you wouldn't know it by the majority of the conversation. Anyways, Chris, before we're all done here, and I am going to end things soon so I can tend to this and that or on the home front and get to some recording later, anything that maybe you got cut off on that you need to bring up or that you forgot or you wanted to mention or... again, I really wanted to go more into new horror movie stuff, but your ADD kind of, wore me down, and I got the, I lost that arm wrestling match. So we went in other directions, but the horror genre, Black Mirror, oh, I ran my mouth on that too. Oops. But all right. Anyways, see, I have a tendency to get a roll going and run my mouth. You have a tendency to go into different directions and, it's like watching somebody juking on a football field. It's you step the wrong way, you're going to miss the tackle.
Look at that truck. What are you saying?
Squirrel. Yeah, I got you. Anyways. Go ahead.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, I don't know about you, but horror movies nowadays, for the most part, I don't know. I can't really get into too many of them, you know? I mean, if they're not like a sequel to something I really enjoy, you know? I mean, they have this thing that you had brought up the other night.
Right, and I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
Yeah, it could be okay, I guess. I mean, I actually wrote a screenplay like in there, maybe 2009. Mm-hmm. It was called Something Gone Awry, and it kind of had a theme like that where it had to do with a kid that was, you know, homosexual that came from a really repressed religious family that ends up sending him to one of those camps that, you know, basically tries to fix him, and things go, you know, something gone awry. And would have been one of these, had I been able to get it produced, it would have been one of those independent things. It may not have even been considered, you know, traditional horror. It would have been horrific, the stuff that happens in it when you try to mess with someone's brain when nothing really is wrong with them. Mm. So when I heard about this movie, it just reminded me of that, and that, yeah, maybe I was onto something back then. But, you know, I mean, if you snooze, you lose. Well, that kind of thing.
Let me ask you about this, because, you know, all this stuff does bring me to something that I haven't been able to ask too many people about, because they don't really care about this stuff so much. There is the rebooted Twilight Zone, right? On
Jordan Peele.
Yeah, Jordan Peele. Okay, so Jordan Peele rebooted the Twilight Zone. I tried to look at it. I'm not impressed. And frankly, I hated their TV show, Key and Peele. I thought it was like, these guys are not even really funny. I mean, they had a couple of good concepts, like, you know, the angry guy talking around Obama while he was speaking. I mean, that was kind of funny. Yeah. But, I mean, outside of that, it was just like, here's two guys that are just mediocre as hell, and I didn't think they were funny at all. Anyhow,
they were doing like awkward things, not really humorous.
But awkward, but not awkward enough so that it's just like, oh my God. It just was like, eh. You know, it was.
That's the times we're in, though. That's the audience that, you know, doesn't take much, I guess.
It was like, you know, if Dave Chappelle's show was, you know, a good, healthy plate of vegetables. You know what I mean? These guys were like the baby food blended up, bland version of. You know what I mean? Where it was like, hey, I could eat carrots, or I could eat this strained carrots and peas combination here in the bottle that's a unique color that you can't even describe. And it'll probably look the same coming out as it went in. Like that.
It just reminded me of Idiocracy, in that movie that people are watching movies within that world, like Ask the Movie, you know, doesn't take much.
Well, and see, there you go. Like, people want to see an ass on a screen, but if that's all there is, I guess you're easily amused. Anyways,
that's why I was thinking, like, if you want to be a filmmaker nowadays, the bar is so low, you just have to make sure you don't trip on it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, but. Odd question for you, though. Peele has been now lauded as, you know, a great director and all this kind of stuff, and he's supposed to be a brilliant writer. Now, frankly, I have not gotten interested in watching his stuff. I looked at the Twilight Zone thing, and I found it to be like, okay, you know, we have gone way out of our way to try and update something that was brilliant. And that's all it is. I mean...
I feel like what you were describing, Black Mirror kind of took up the mantle in a way of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna go further with it, you got to be nuanced and interesting. Which in the '60s, that Twilight Zone stuff was revolutionary,
and it still holds up, in my opinion.
And it still holds up, even though you got to get over, you know, weird stuff like landline telephones and, you know, things like this.
Black and white and all that, yeah.
Black and white, okay. But the thing is that Peele has now done a couple of horror movies.
Get Out and now, the upcoming Nope, which may actually be in theaters right now.
Yeah, see, now Get Out, I got the concept of, and it was like, we're also going to add the racial element. Okay. And, you know, and that's one thing. But they also had another movie where it was like... I don't know what it was called, but it was sort of like
about people's doppelgangers.
Yeah, with the doppelgangers, right? Now, that to me sounded like a concept that, like, I would submit to watching that. I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it, but I might if somebody, you know, said, look, I got a copy of this, or, you know, look, I got this on the streaming service. I want you to see it. I might sit down and watch it because it looks like an interesting concept, and I've seen clips of it where it's like, this has got to be kind of creepy and might be decent.
But, and you know what else he you know where you're going to laugh, because I mentioned it earlier and you kind of pooped all over it, but he took inspiration from Judd, and Judd's actually in the movie too.
Oh God. All right. Well, anyway, look, it's not like I hate
the movie. Judd will change your life, buddy.
Okay.
But we'll knock it.
I don't hate the movie. I just don't. I'm just not impressed. I was more impressed I was more impressed by the movie The Stuff. I told you this.
Okay, all right. That's just all right. I can't do this. All right. Killer Ice Cream. Come on, yes. Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers, and Ice Cream.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I like the Killer Ice Cream better. Case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I like the movie Humongous better. Okay.
Motion to dismiss.
Okay, fine, but. Back to this Jordan Peele situation.
Yeah.
You know, they're now pumping this up, this new thing, this Nope.
Well, that's what I said when someone asked me if I wanted to go to the theater to see it. So, you know.
I don't know. But see, now, I don't know if it's about the way that they're promoting it, that it just makes no sense. I mean, it's bad when the trailer doesn't make sense.
It just feels too woke-ish. And I'm not even one of these guys who, like, poo-poos the whole woke thing, but... It just feels, I don't know, something off about it, and not like a creepy off, just, I don't know, like you said, the promotion of it, I don't know.
Yeah, well, even as a Star Trek fan, I got people that are telling me they can't watch the new Star Trek because it's too woke, you know, and not the newest Star Trek, by the way, but the one that's now had, I think, 4 seasons, Discovery.
CBS Plus or whatever?
Yeah, Paramount Network now, but it was CBS Plus to begin with. But the thing is, they you know, it's like they had to have a black woman captain, and I'm like, okay, fine. And they did some other stuff with it. There was only really one instance in there where I felt like, you know, political correctness was being shoved into it, like awkwardly. But outside of that, I'm not disturbed by the stuff on there. You know, sometimes things are a little too touchy-feely. And a little too, you know, like just gentle about certain things. I'm like, come on now, let's get real about a few things. But that show still stays real in certain places and doesn't entirely bow. But see, Star Trek has always been a franchise that did, kind of go with that. I mean, even putting Uhura on TV as a main character and as part of the command crew,
was huge
in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
I don't like what they've done with the Uhura character, by the way, on Strange New Worlds, which is the latest Star Trek thing, which goes back to the Captain Pike era and all that. But either way,
Don't they have a cartoon that's like almost Rick and Morty-ish, like with the over-the-top humor and stuff, too?
Yeah, and that's Lower Decks.
As a Star Trek fan and a fan of that kind of cartoon, I believe, right? Do you think that they just don't mix?
It doesn't work for me. I'm not into it. And they also have something else which is like very CGI driven, which is you know, much, much more advanced sort of animation. Called Prodigy, which
I heard about that.
Yeah, I mean, they are literally pushing like 4 or 5 shows at a time now, Star Trek based. So, you know, for anybody that was complaining you didn't get new Star Trek, you're getting it now.
Well, that was like us superhero fans. We only had Christopher Reeve and Michael Keaton for years and years.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, Hollywood is just superhero movies now.
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood has just pumped out I don't know how many Marvel Universe movies. Still, I love Punisher. That's one of the best TV series ever, in my estimation.
Then you might be happy to know that Jon Bernthal, might be putting the skull back on, because Marvel just had the teaser trailer for the Daredevil show that they're going to have on Disney Plus, and apparently they're going to do it right, just like the Netflix. They're going to keep it more R-rated.
Well, I hope so. You know, and I did not, and a lot of people would think I'd be a fan of Daredevil. I'm not. And I'm
yeah,
also...
but you got to admit, did you enjoy the conversation that those two characters had on the rooftop in season two?
Oh no, once
he's like, I'm just one day away from being you.
No, listen, once they introduced Punisher into that, and by the way, I was skeptical about John Bernthal playing Punisher until I saw it, and it was really good because I actually care about that character.
Me too.
And I love that comic book. It gets a little weird later on, you know, with
Frankencastle when he becomes like Frankenstein.
Yeah. You know, he comes
or he
back.
Becomes Heaven's hitman too at one point.
Yeah, he comes back from the dead and he's stitched together and all this. Okay, but it's a comic book, all right.
That aside, everything else. Yeah,
the initial premise, the storyline. Of course, he's a Vietnam veteran at a certain point, and now they've updated it.
Iraq.
You know, to me, they adequately showed things about PTSD on there and treated it well in the series, the two seasons. I mean, I literally own the DVDs of that series because, to me, it's that good. It's awesome. So if they're going to put him into the Disney Plus series, although I don't subscribe to Disney, I may have to get my hands on it. And I'm not a big Daredevil fan. Daredevil, though, that show was better than, the Ben Affleck Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Affleck, I'm still aggravated with him being Batman, too. Ben Affleck does not need to be a superhero, for God's sake. But anyway.
His last turn as the Dark Knight is going to be with another Dark Knight, one of my favorites, Michael Keaton in the Flash movie. But they keep postponing that because the guy who plays the Flash apparently likes to stalk women, apparently. Yeah. So we might not even get that.
Well, who knows? I mean, maybe they'll come up with another guy. I mean, it's...
I want to see Michael Keaton again, though.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I got you. I'm all good with it, okay? It's just... Yeah. I just don't like Ben Affleck. All right. Anyways.
I hear you. You're not alone, I heard.
No, but back to this about the Star Trek stuff. I like the not the Prodigy series. The Prodigy and Lower Decks, you would think I would love it because I like animation, but I'm not into it. I like Discovery, though, and Brave New World's just completed its season maybe a couple of weeks ago because they released some one a week with the Star Trek series on Paramount. And that is I have the lowest level subscription. They keep trying to convince me to pay them more, but I got in on a promotion where it's like $5 a month, and I'm sticking with it. And I know I got to get choked by commercials, but whatever, I get my Star Trek. Okay. And that's also how I got to see Beavis and Butthead do the universe, which I think is absolutely awful.
I still haven't watched that, and I was looking forward to it. I still haven't watched that just based on what you had said about it.
You know what? Maybe I could figure out a way to maybe have you view it with me one night. But
I mean, if it's complete drivel and politically correct, then yeah, I'm not interested.
It's not. You know what? It's not complete drivel. I mean, it's some of it is like you're hopeful, but you can see them playing it safe. They're playing it safe with Beavis and Butthead. That's not what you do with those guys.
Yeah.
So, and Mike Judge. And I'm hoping Mike Judge, when he relaunches King of the Hill, does more with it than.
See, I was never a fan of the original anyway, so that doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, it took me a while to get into it, but by the time I did, it's got its charm for sure. But they're talking about doing a whole updated version of that. Bringing the Hill family into modern times, but obviously there's two characters that are going to have to be missing unless they recast them.
Brittany Murphy,
because Brittany Murphy played Luann, and
she was murdered too. That's for another time.
And Tom Petty was
really
Lucky. Yeah, Tom Petty played her husband in there, Lucky.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, recurring character and all that too. Last couple
was
seasons.
Was he good?
I thought he was great.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, no,
I love his songs, but I didn't think he did any kind of acting or voice work.
Yeah, no, check it out. If you check out his IMDb, you'll find he was Lucky, which is again was Brittany Murphy's character's husband. So Luann and Lucky.
Okay.
They had a baby at a certain point in the storyline, and the series ended. And since then, they both passed away. So. You know, different circumstances, each of them, but still. Anyways.
Now, What did you think, now that it's in my mind, what did you think when they announced that Tarantino was toying with the idea of doing a Star Trek movie?
Probably a
R-rated Star Trek movie.
Yeah, a train wreck I might want to see. You know, I like...
Yeah, because it was supposed to be a time travel story where it goes to one of those gangster eras. Like, you know, where the Next Generation did a bunch of those where they were dressed up like gangsters and stuff.
Well, a few of them did that. Next Generation did it. The original series did it.
Yeah.
The original series episode, if my memory serves me correct, was called Piece of the Action.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually what he was going to base his on.
Yeah, okay. And that would make sense. And I could see how you could easily go R-rated. And, of course, Tarantino style. I mean, I don't know where we're going to fit in the foot fetish, because that always has to come in with Tarantino. You know, and how do you go with campy 70s violence on Star Trek? I don't know, but... It would be
He was going to do it, basing it off of that episode you just named.
Yeah, but, I mean, that episode was, you know, not one of the better original series Star Trek.
When he said time travel, I'm a time travel junkie. I was like, all right.
Yeah, but every incarnation of Star Trek has done time travel stories.
I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan, so when you add the time travel thing, it makes it all the more appealing to me.
Yeah, but I'm saying every single series had time travel. Every series that has been released has had, if it had a run at all, I mean, outside of the original cartoon series, which is not part of the universe's canon.
From the 70s. I remember that.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Planet of the Apes said the same thing. It was like Filmation, where only the mouths moved or something.
Yeah, well, kind of like that. And it did look a lot like the Planet of the Apes cartoon. I think it was the same people who did it.
Yeah, Filmation. Yep.
Yeah, so anyway, the thing is they've all had an alternate universe, which they always refer to in some way as a mirror universe.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So from the beginning of the series, it was like evil Kirk and evil Spock got switched in the transporter with
so they're Bizarro.
Yeah, like Bizarro World, right. So they've always had that. Next Generation did it many times. Deep Space Nine did it. They all did time travel. And at a certain point, they all have the mirror universe comes into play somehow.
You know when they saved the whales too in the 80s in the movies?
Yeah, that's one of the. But that's the thing is, even in the old, you know, original series movie series, they had time travel where they come back to Earth. So you know, there's that. What was it? Star Trek Enterprise with Scott Bakula.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They had a time travel thing. They had the mirror universe.
Did Picard the new one? Did that? Do any time travel?
Picard.
Actually, now I think about when they killed off Shatner, when they had the crossover thing with him and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
That was all time travel because they were like 100 years apart, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. But, well, I don't know what the distance is, literally. But, yeah, no, there was time travel there. But also in the in Picard, yeah, there's time travel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
there's... like that one?
It's, you know what, it's not as great as some people think it is in my mind, but it's passable. It's a decent series.
Because I liked when he did the Logan thing with Hugh Jackman, and they kind of made it a Western, and that was his old age version of Professor X having, like, dementia and those powers, which made him like a nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, no, as Professor X, Patrick Stewart's great. I also like him on American Dad as the... deputy director of the CIA.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was good too. And then Seth MacFarlane produced a live action series with him that was like raunchy and stuff. It was on Stars. I can't remember the name of it, but he got to really shine like comedically. Yeah, I forget the name of it.
I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, well now you got one on me. I don't know that one, but anyway,
yeah, it looked funny.
Yeah. Oh, you know the other thing I forgot about the Black Mirror deal is that guy goes into the Star Trek universe. It is. You know, it's clearly a nod
Star
at
Trek.
That.
Yeah.
It's not Star Trek, but it's obviously a bad knockoff of Star Trek. Okay.
What's What's it called before I watch it? Like, what did they call the knockoff version?
I don't know, but it's one of the last episodes they made.
I thought it was a whole season that they did of that.
No, it's one episode.
Mm-mm. Oh.
Yeah, each one of these things I described to you are one episode. That's the thing.
Someone that I trust told me that, described it, that it was a whole season where they did this Star Trek knockoff motif.
They're not right. It's one episode. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's one episode.
Okay.
And it's weird. It's got all that stuff in it, and it's very comedic. but also has, you know, the dark messages in it. You know, and like I was saying about the whole thing with Lady Gaga or whatever as the Ashley doll. That's where the only thing where it comes together is the museum episode, like I said, where you have, you know, all of these things that, you know, you've watched all these different stories. They don't appear connected until you find out that they have all this stuff in a museum of, like, you know, things that have gone terribly wrong. Okay.
Like the Friday the 13th, the series.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because when you mentioned that, I said, okay, yeah. But and that's a single episode, and that was one of the season finales. So I thought the series was done. And then they released two episodes. And I think one of them was the Star Trek episode, and the other one might have been the Ashley episode, where there was just two episodes, and I thought they were going to release more, and I have not seen any new stuff. So,
I'll look into it, and I'll let you know what I come up with.
Yeah, because I've seen in some places where they said the series might have been canceled, and in some places not. So I don't know.
Actually, Ray from Down Under just mentioned that Seth MacFarlane has the knockoff series called The Orville. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I took a look at it, but yeah, it's like Seth MacFarlane's version of Star Trek, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good?
Look, I didn't watch much of it, but it didn't really hold my attention, which, you know.
Oh, okay.
But then again, Seth MacFarlane also did that, you know, what is it, A Thousand Ways to Die in the West?
I saw that. The only thing I liked about that is the fact that Christopher Lloyd played Doc Brown in the DeLorean in the barn, which was a nod to Back to the Future 3.
Nice. Well, look, I love animation stuff. I do like Family Guy, although I'm not going to put another dollar in his pocket because I'm angry at him. But
why are you angry at him?
It's a whole thing with vaccinations he did.
It
was really, really just horrific, to the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to put another dollar in your pocket.
Was like Trey and Matt. That's like the guys from South Park with their COVID specials. I was like, come on, guys.
Yeah, but I am less aggravated by the guys from South Park when they do stuff like that than when MacFarlane does it, because it's very bluntly preachy, nasty when MacFarlane does it. And South Park is usually all over the map, just hit everybody. You know, but MacFarlane very much targeted, people that, you know, how could you be retarded enough pretty much to question vaccination?
Yeah. You know what they do need to bring back, though, is the Brothers Grunt.
Okay, I don't know that one, but I will say this. When MacFarlane did the movie Ted and even the sequel, I like those.
I was almost in those as extras.
Yep. Well, I do like those. Very, very cool. I think it's funny. But generally speaking, when he does live action stuff, I'm not into it. You know, the Cleveland Show was okay, but clearly it was just meant to be a Black Family Guy, and they didn't put massive effort into it, in my mind. I mean, but
it was kind of stale.
Yeah, it was a little stale, and American Dad got stale for a bit, but now that it's been sold off to TBS or whatever, it's gotten a little more energy to it, although I bet they're not really getting a good return on that investment. It just doesn't seem to be popular, but I still find that funny.
My only gripe with him is like why he lied about the September 11th thing, because he had said that he was sitting at Logan Airport and he missed the plane with a hangover by like 10 minutes. But then in the 9/11 report, it says that his agent called like 3 hours before and had the ticket canceled. So I still rack my brain around what that was all about.
Well, yeah, to my understanding, he just overslept and didn't make it to the plane that day. But
Yeah, but he used to tell the story like on talk shows where he was sitting in the lounge, like having a drink and watching the news coverage, and someone saying, "Oh, that was your plane, dude."
I don't know. Maybe we should unpack that one night on the show. That would be interesting because I don't know too much about it outside of the general story that I understood.
Well, in my research for Don Jeffrey's Hidden History 3, I came upon that, and I used to love Seth MacFarlane. And I'm like, what's going on here? Because in the 9/11 report, it actually specifically singles that out, that he was never at Logan Airport.
Okay. Look, fair enough. And by the way, is Don going to be your guest on Get Mad this week or what?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he agreed to it. So okay. That should be pretty fun.
There you go. So this coming Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern, live anyway, you'll be able to catch Get Mad with Chris Graves. I have no idea what you're going to talk to Don Jeffries about, but let's hold that back and see if people want to tune in and find out.
I'm working on Bud Bundy, too, for you.
Oh, now David Faustino, I might actually open my microphone on your show just to say hi to him on air, to be honest with you.
We're working on that. Her. That's great. He's making awesome. Fun of the guest already. Or Katie Sagal, I got in the works, too.
Oh, Katie Sagal. Well, see, I love Katie Sagal for various reasons.
Emma Teller and Peggy Bundy. Yep.
Not the least of which, though, is Leela.
Oh, yeah, Futurama.
From Futurama, yeah.
She was with John Ritter on 8 Simple Rules when he passed away.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
I love that lady. She's got longevity that not just men or women, anyone in that industry, you know? And she was a backup singer for Bette Midler and Gene Simmons and Bob, what's his face?
There you go.
Bob Dylan.
And I'm telling you, as much as she was a big joke on Married with Children, I always looked at her and said, damn, that woman's pretty good looking.
So did Sam Kinison. Yep.
Apparently, yeah, I was going to mention that. I think Sam tried to take a stab at that. I don't know if he got anywhere, but you know what? If you interview her, you could ask.
I'll ask her. Yeah.
So there you go. Get Mad with Chris Graves. I know it seems like we kind of did a 3-hour commercial for him tonight, but yeah, there it is. The Ocelli Effect is done for Wednesday, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are. Remember that I am merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. And please support the network. I'll talk to you tomorrow, or at least Jack Blood will talk to you tomorrow first, and then my show will go live, because that'll be Thursday. Take care, everybody.